with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Then about a minute and 15 seconds past the starting hour for the program this evening. Welcome aboard. I think we'll have 3 hours of Jim Dandy good conversation this evening. Still trying to get over whatever the hell this is, the Smithfield flu or whatever. This thing has some staying power, folks, I gotta tell you. It's nasty. But I'm here, and I will hang in for all I'm worth. A couple of things that I should have gotten into last night, and of course, you know what tonight is. Yep, that's right, it's Wednesday. Middle of the week, hump day, downhill to Friday. I will be on the air tomorrow night, by the way. This is a bye week for Ferg's middle school football team, so I don't have to be anywhere tomorrow night. So unless I've just gone to feeling totally like, yeah, I'll be here. But it's so much more than the middle of the week. It is so much more than hump day Wednesday. That's right. Brothers and sisters, this is that most special evening of any given week. Yes, hallelujah, glory be. It is, in fact, prayer meeting. And, Mr. Choir Master, if you wouldn't mind getting us started, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will. Empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around. And it's all tax free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest. He'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD. Just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah. Solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity, yeah. Whoever said religion should be free?
Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang. I love you. Come on down. Welcome, 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 one and all, to the Cathedral of Common Sense. Come on down. The blood red carpet. Down to the altar, get on your knees, feel yourself being drawn to your knees as you lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense a-flowing through you. Glory, glory, glory. Ha! It is Prayer Meeting Wednesday here on the Horn. I am Bishop Bob Kincaid here to bring the salvation of thought, the salvation of reason, the salvation of common sense to you. Amen and amen. Praise. Let's start, before we get into the business of the evening, brothers and sisters, let's start with a little something sent along to me by our blogger, Texas Betsy. Let's, in fact, go to Georgia. Let's go to Lakeview Fort Oglethorpe High School. Hallelujah, praise! A little glory added for a good measure. And let's talk a little cheerleading. Now, you and I, to one degree or another, we've all been through some sort of school, and we know what the school athletics are. We know about the cheerleading squad. Well, at Lakeview Fort Oglethorpe High School, they're cheering for Jesus. Yes! That's right. They have banners. They have banners that the thundering young high school football players go running through at the beginning of the football game. We've seen it happen a million times, haven't we? Those of us who, you know, do the high school or middle school football thing. And they make signs and they hang them around the stadium to inspire the football team. The signs, they break through paper signs with biblical verses calling on them to commit to the Lord and take courage and do it. I think of that saint, George Carlin, and I remember when he would talk about what a confusing name he had. It was the name, he said, that never ended. G-E-O-R-G-E. O-R-G-E-O-R-G-E-O-R-G-E. And that, as a child, he was always hearing, let George do it. Let George do it. Do what? And then he realized they weren't even talking about the it part that he thought was fun. And he said, screw it, you do it. Great routine, that. Take courage and do it. Yeah, I don't know. Why not a little Shakespeare? Screw your courage to the sticking place. Well, that probably wouldn't play well with the necks down in Lakeview Fort Oglethorpe High School. Brad Scott is a local youth minister who apparently has some hand in this, getting the cheerleaders to get their little cheerful banners all Jesused up. He said, all right, we're not trying to push a religious cause to shove religion down someone's throat. Cheerleaders are just using scripture to show motivation and inspiration to the players and the fans. Ah, yes, that other sage, Jethro Bodine. I was just over on the Brando set, and you know what they got over there, Uncle Jed? Motivation. They got motivation over there. They're just swimming in. That's what we need, Uncle Jed, motivation. Just using scripture to show motivation. And, of course, Jonathan Turley, who broke the story at his brilliant blog, jonathanturley.org, notes, I wonder how parents would feel about some heartening Muslim passages like, he is the mighty, the wise one, or the fate of each man we have bound about his neck. Now, the school system did get a complaint, and they found that it was violative of the First Amendment of the Constitution to put, you know, signs with Bible verses out there in a public school context. But the parents are incensed, brethren and sistren. They are incensed. They're demanding that the Bible be brought back to the football field. Now they're trying to take Jesus out of football. When we all have the stirring example of Jesus H. Tebow taking a concussion for the Lord up 31 points against Kentucky last Saturday in the third quarter. Hallelujah. God be praised. Jonathan Turley suggests some other Bible verses the little cheer squad might want to use. Zephaniah 2:12-15, you will also be slaughtered by my sword. Hey, that's nice. Or Psalm 63:11, they shall be apportioned for foxes. And then Job 41:1-34, when he raises himself up the mighty fear because of the crashing, they are bewildered. Or Judges. Judges is always good for some smiting and smoting. I think that's where the terrorist Samson went about slaughtering Philistines who weren't doing anything to him. The men of Judah attacked Jerusalem and captured it, killing all its people and setting the city on fire. Sis, boom, bah! The mayor of Fort Oglethorpe is one Ronnie Cobb. And he says, I'm against them doing away with it. If it's offensive to anyone, let them go watch another football game. Nobody's forced to come here, and nobody's forced to read the signs. Yeah. And, of course, there are other great Bible verses, too. Why not, the story of Lot and his daughters getting it on? That's some sexy Bible. Or, the David and Jonathan stuff. I mean, these are teammates, right? Yeah. So, never fear. Christianity is apparently, evangelical fundamentalism. We're not talking about Christianity here. Is in full sway in Lakeview Fort Oglethorpe High School. Of course, if there's a redeeming value to this, it's the fact that the kids on the football team couldn't care less. They just want to get out there and play some ball. Although there's probably a Fellowship of Christian Athletes chapter down there, and whenever one of them scores a touchdown, runs into the end zone, he probably has the ball under one arm, and he points that index finger up to Jesus. I scored it for you, Lord. Hallelujah. So that's a starting point. And by the way, if you don't make a point of going over to jonathanturley.org periodically just to see what kind of lunacy he's got out there, you're missing a lot. Jonathan, J-O-N-A-T-H-A-N, Jonathan Turley, T-U-R-L-E-Y.org. A brilliant man, great lawyer, and he's got a real eye for the absurd. And then he's also got an eye for the evil, because although the video has been disappeared down the memory hole, hey, where'd it go? He does have the story of something interesting from the G20 and the protests that happened in the last week. It turns out that in this video that has been disappeared, down the memory hole, the Pittsburgh police were caught on video using a protester, get this, as a trophy. Several Pittsburgh police officers captured themselves, one of them protesters, one of them outside agitators, and made the protester kneel in front of them and then took a group picture. With the protester in a submissive position on her knees in front of the police. You go to click on it, and it says, this video has been removed due to terms of use violation. One wonders how the terms of use were violated. Kind of hard to figure. So, all of that is there. I want to go backward, though, if I may, if you don't mind. To something that I had last night that a number of you sent in to me. This is one of those Newsmax, or not Newsmax. Thank heaven for MediaMatters.org, because MediaMatters.org archived a disappeared Newsmuck column that went up yesterday by a person by the name of John L. Perry. September 29th at Newsmax, he posted a column that has since been disappeared. And, I guess in a way, thank heavens for Newsmax, too, because what would we do for content if it weren't for insane, hateful, bigoted, vicious thugs like John L. Perry. John L. Perry wrote a column saying that a military coup to resolve the Obama problem is not unrealistic. He wrote, there is a remote, although gaining possibility, America's military will intervene as a last resort to resolve the Obama problem. Don't dismiss it as unrealistic. America isn't the third world. If a military coup does occur here, it will be civilized. That it has never happened doesn't mean it won't. Describing what may be afoot is not to advocate it. Yeah, sure, John. Then why are you mentioning it? Will the day come when patriotic general and flag officers sit down with the president or with those who control him and work out? Because, see, he's, you know, that one of those, and he couldn't be operating on his own behalf. He'd have to be controlled, right, those who control him. And work out the national equivalent of a family intervention with some form of limited shared responsibility. Imagine a bloodless coup. At this point, I'm thinking John L. Perry's typing with one hand. You know what I mean? Because this is the kind of sick masturbatory fantasy that the right wing has been just absolutely knee-deep in of late. Imagine a bloodless coup to restore and defend the Constitution through an... To what degree has the Constitution been subverted? I mean, honestly, I know the Constitution was subverted with the Patriot Act, but Barack Obama didn't do that. I know that the Constitution was subverted by virtue of the more or less elimination of habeas corpus, but Barack Obama didn't do that. I know that the Constitution has been subverted by domestic spying and wiretapping and email monitoring, but Barack Obama didn't do that. The subversion these freaks are talking about is Barack Obama's the ab initio guilt in, I don't know what, chief executive while black? Now, granted, the token chair of the Republican National Committee, Michael Steele, he wants to be careful, he says, about playing the race card. Yeah, okay. He showed up on CNN today, where he was asked about the Facebook poll, should Obama be killed? And by the way, I said the other night, I agreed the other night, that Facebook is owned by Rupert Murdoch. It's not. That's MySpace, which explains why I just despise MySpace in the first place. But anyway. And he was asked whether that poll was spawned by racism. Never mind me telling you what Mr. Steele said. Chairman Steele. Let's let Chairman Steele speak for himself.
And Mr. Chairman, I want to ask you a little bit about anger in America. And it was really driven home over the weekend by this incredibly tasteless Facebook poll that asked whether or not President Obama should be killed. You know, that the choices were yes, maybe, if he cuts my health care, no. We talked to Boyce Watkins from Syracuse University yesterday, who said that he thought this was emblematic of a larger problem of racism in this country. What are your thoughts on that? Do you agree? Was this spawned by racism?
No, I don't think. I'm always very careful about going down that road, you know, so blindly and so quickly. First off, let's deal with the question that's on Facebook. How stupid is that? Why would you put something like that on Facebook? It is, you know, it's just
really stupid is the best thing that Michael Steele has to describe a murderous query. Stupid. Can't quite reach evil. Can't quite reach un-American, can't quite reach criminal, felonious. Yeah, there's a lot. Stupid? That's the best thing he's got is stupid? And why was it stupid, Michael Steele? Was it stupid because they put it out there and actually put voice to what most of your weird little Confederacy rump party thinks? Or was it stupid because it was on Facebook when it should have been on the RNC homepage the entire time? But anyway.
It takes us to a place where we don't need to be, quite frankly, in the debate of any public policy issue, number one. Number two, I think more to the point is, we've always had underlying everything we've done in this country, whether it's, you know, the happiest times or the worst of times, race is a factor because all boats don't rise equally. Everyone is affected differently, and their perceptions are driven by...
race is a... oh, my God. That's a keeper. That's one for your tombstone, Michael. Race is a factor because all boats don't rise equally. You know, some boats don't rise at all because Whitey's been putting holes in it. But, you know, that's just me and I, well, you know.
What people may tell them or what they know in fact. And I think cooler heads, and I applaud the president on this front, has been out there saying, look, let's separate all of this into the appropriate pockets and not go down this road unnecessarily. And I think the Facebook is a bad example of a good example of a bad practice.
Tom Friedman, of course, noted columnist with the New York Times, author of many best-selling books, had something interesting to say on all of this anger surrounding the president and from the opposition. He said, quote, criticism from the far right has begun tipping over into delegitimation and creating the same kind of climate here that existed in Israel on the eve of the Rabin assassination. Do you agree with that? I mean, are we going down a road here where there's potential violence?
Where did these nut jobs come from? I mean, come on, stop this. I mean, wait a
minute. Wait. Who's the nut job? Tom Friedman is the nut. I mean, you know, I don't hold a lot of respect for Tom Friedman, but Tom Friedman is the nut job for suggesting that this looks a hell of a lot like the right wing crap storm that took place in Israel. And that makes Tom Friedman the nut job? Instead of the incredibly dangerous... well,
wait a minute, Tom Friedman's a nut job?
Oh, well, okay, let's see.
Well, I'm just saying, to make those kinds of equations, examples, and put that out there that way, to me, it's just crazy. And yeah, I'm sorry, but if you're going to approach this discussion, approach it from a rational position. You're saying because you disagree with the president on policy that all of a sudden we're going to make this leap into, you know, assassinations and all this other stuff. I mean, at the height of all the stuff on Bush and people complaining and protesting and jumping up and down, you didn't have this kind of conversation. Now, all of a sudden you're going to cut.
That's because we weren't calling for him to be killed, Michael. We were calling for him, and I remember I used the words. We were calling for George W. Bush, a war criminal, a violator of the tenets of the Constitution, a man unfit for office. We were calling for him to be, and this is important, peacefully and legally removed from office. We were calling for his impeachment. We were calling for the actual utilization of constitutional tools that are embodied and enshrined within our form of government that should have been used to protect the polity that is the United States from the depredations of an absolute ignorant madman. But no one was calling for him to be killed. Not even Cheney. No. Because we, among other things, we're not like that. We're liberals. We don't want to go around bumping people off, for God's sakes. You know, we're not the mob. We're not Republicans. So, you know, there goes Michael Steele setting up a false equivalency that is simply not there.
Tolerate because of a public policy debate in terms of race because the president is black.
But, Mr. Chairman,
I just don't think that's necessarily where you need to go.
Not to say that it's about the color of his skin or his background, ethnic background or whatever, but threats against this president are at a level 400% higher than they were against the former President Bush. What explains that?
I mean, how do we know that? No one's ever reported on what the threat levels were against President Bush or any other president.
Secret Service has indicated that the threat levels against this president are 400% higher than they were against President
Bush. I don't know that because I don't have a report to compare that to the secret.
What are you, unfrozen caveman chairman? I don't know what these 400 times threats are. I am very confused by them. I am merely an unfrozen caveman Republican chairman. You know, it really does make sense insofar as their politics are positively Pleistocene, although that's probably unfair to those who lived in the Pleistocene because there's evidence to suggest that they were quite clever and quite forward-thinking folk. They've gotten past the whole cannibalism thing. The Republican Party hasn't. They've learned to live in peaceful societies. The Republican Party hasn't. Well, you know, I don't want to address that. Well, next question.
Service has I haven't seen that publicly.
I haven't seen it. I didn't see the sun come up this morning, so I'm not entirely sure that that's what's blazing in the sky outside this studio. It could be a great ball of fire from an alien civilization.
Put out there statistically to show that. But even if it is, this is my point. You know, I think that we need to be very smart and very careful about jumping, making these leaps on race and connecting dots that may or may not exist.
Please don't accuse the Republican Party of being a bunch of racists, even though we are. Please don't. Because then even more people are likely to figure it out, and we'll go from 20% to 15 to 10, and the next thing you know, my chairman check gonna bounce. What a moron. Bugs Bunny, where are you when we need you? So, you know, that's hand in hand with this column that has been conveniently disappeared from the Newsmuck. Imagine a bloodless coup to restore and defend the Constitution through an interim administration that would do the serious business of governing and defending the nation. Huh? Where was that government doing the serious business of governing and defending the nation on September 11th, 2001? Was that, have I awakened in a parallel universe and that was Al Gore's presidency? No, that was George W. Bush who was asleep at the switch, had that, you know, that convenient little flyer in his hand, you know, the Bin Laden determined to strike inside U.S., and then he did, after George had sent, you know, back in January of that year, he had sent the Hart-Rudman, the study about airport security that came in, and it said, you know, these guys are going to try to do something through an airport. And that was January 2001. And it wasn't that thick that George couldn't, or somebody could have read it to him by, you know, August. I mean, there was a lot of vacation time in there. But instead, George hustled it off over to FEMA to let the guy who was at the time Brownie's boss deal with it. Yeah, you remember that time, don't you? That's back when George was hollering about tax cuts and missile shields for North Korea. Skilled, military-trained nation builders would replace accountability-challenged radical left commissars. Having bonded with his twin teleprompters, the president would be detailed for ceremonial speech-making. This evil bastard wants a military coup. How many times have I said that the Republican Party despises our form of government and aches to get rid of it? There's your proof. Military intervention is what Obama's exponentially accelerating agenda for fundamental change toward a Marxist state. Did I miss the speech? I mean, I know Barack Obama gives really good speeches, and I haven't heard one of those really good speeches where he says, "And I have a dream for fundamental change toward a Marxist state." A coup is not an ideal option, but Obama's radical ideal is not acceptable or reversible. This man is advocating treason.
He is advocating high treason on the part of the military of the United States. He is openly calling for armed rebellion against the civil government of this nation. They lost. They didn't just lose. They got their asses handed to them. Republican Party, is this yours? And they can't stand it. And it's not that far different from what Bill Clinton was subjected to. He handed them their ass, too. And they screamed about it and did it. They tried to remove him from office, even though he was legitimately, fully, and duly, and thoroughly elected. They tried to remove William Jefferson Clinton from office based on trumped-up charges relating to a consensual sex act. And now, since they don't have a Congress to spend $70 or $90 or $190 million of the taxpayers' money on a pornographic witch hunt, now they're calling for military coups. Do they have any idea of what that looks like? Of what it feels like? Of what it would mean to the people of the United States? Or would the people of the United States, being good little citizens in a fascist dictatorship, simply do what citizens do in a fascist dictatorship and try to keep their heads down, the TVs on, and out of trouble? Just stay in your house, citizen. You'll be fine. Your regularly scheduled television programming will not be interrupted. Perry continues, unthinkable? Then think up an alternative nonviolent solution to the Obama problem. Just don't shrug and say we can always worry about that later. The Obama problem. Can you see where this is coming from? Do you see the evil, dark, fearful, poisonous, toxic place that this comes from? An Obama problem? Well, an Obama problem needs an Obama solution, doesn't it? Probably, preferably, an Obama final solution. This is sickening. In the 2008 election, that was the wistful, and he's back referring. Unthinkable? Then think up an alternative, nonviolent solution to the Obama problem. Just don't shrug and say, we can always worry about that later. In the 2008 election, that was the wistful, self-indulgent, indifferent reliance on abnegation of personal responsibility that has sunk the nation into this morass. What morass? The morass brought about by the disastrous the devil-may-care spending policies of the Bush administration? That morass? The morass caused by two intractable wars that we can't seem to extract ourselves from? That morass? The morass that caused by the wholesale collapse of our economic model because predatory anarcho-randians ran it into the ground? That morass? They want him dead. And they're not coy in saying it. But remember, please, Mr. Adkisson in Knoxville, Tennessee. He said in his little manifesto, citing Michael Savage and Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity, that he couldn't get to the real liberals who were destroying America, so he'd just take out some rank-and-file liberals. And that's when he attacked the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation. They want Barack Obama dead, but they'll settle for you. So often as he closes his program, our dear friend Mike Malloy says, watch your back. No, really, watch your back. I've heard him say it for years, perhaps a decade or more. But he knew then what we're learning now. Now, more than ever, you'd better be ready. You'd better be watching. Because you don't know what's going to piss one of them off. You don't know when one of them are going to draw in the line at the grocery store or at the gas station or at your kid's recital. You don't know when some right-wing thug is going to draw and start killing because of that one. There's an old curse that says, may you live in interesting times. Interesting. Interesting indeed. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Yeah, Matt.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I got over the swine flu myself, too.
Was it as nasty to you as it's been? Oh, my God.
Excuse me. Yeah, it was pretty bad. It took me about 9 days to get over that. That was probably the worst flu I've had in many, many a year.
Well, this thing laid me low, oh, I guess starting Sunday a week ago. And today, I thought I was getting over it, and then all of a sudden today it's like, it's back.
Yeah, it's like some kind of a secondary effect. You know what it reminds me of is the plague of Athens, you know. It goes away and then it comes back.
Well, I mean, is it gone from you, though?
Yeah, at long last. I had to spend, like I said, 8 or 9 days recovering. It seemed like there was a kind of a secondary upper respiratory tract infection. I mean,
Did it start off feeling like allergies or sinuses or whatever, and then
right? It felt like I had like the start of a sore throat and allergies, and then it just ballooned, and it took it about 2 days before I realized, you know, I've got the flu. I was thinking maybe I've just got a little cold, maybe I've just got a sore throat, maybe I've got a sinus infection here, but no, I had the swine flu. It was pretty nasty.
And you know, I mean, it's too early for regular flu season, right?
That's right. It's too early for regular flu season. There's nothing worse than being sick in the summertime. You know that.
Oh. You can't get cool. You can't get warm. You can't get comfortable. No.
No. And it was a miserable time, was had by all. But I was listening to you just now talking about Mr. John Perry. And I got to tell you, I was analyzing this missive of his, and you know, he's really run into Mr. Perry has run into what I call the Gibson's Law. I'm not sure if you're aware of Gibson's Law, but a few years ago, William Gibson, he's the guy who coined the term cyberspace.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, he said this. He wrote an essay in the New York Times, and let me read you just a brief paragraph here. It is becoming unprecedentedly difficult for anyone at all, to keep a secret. In the age of the leak and the blog, of evidence extraction and link discovery, truth will either out or be outed later, if not sooner. This is something I would bring to the attention of every diplomat, politician, and corporate leader. The future eventually will find you out. The future, wielding unimaginable tools of transparency, will have its way with you. In the end, you will be seen to have done that which you did. I like that. In the end, you will be seen to have done that which you did. And that's what's got Mr. Perry here. Media Matters is the one that caught it. You know, they reproduced it. I actually got a screenshot of it. I wound up not using that screenshot in my own blog, but, you know, the proof is there. You can't put something on the Internet and expect it to be totally destroyed. It will get mirrored. That video you were referring to earlier, the video of the G20,
yeah.
You know, there are a half a dozen software programs that let me rip your YouTube and put it on my hard drive. And I can run it out of my own domain. If YouTube doesn't want to support it, I can run it out of my own web domain.
But, Lord, can't that eat your bandwidth alive and just wind up costing you blue in the face?
If you have the right provider, you can have gobs of bandwidth for next to nothing. I pay $10 a year for 990 gigs a month of bandwidth.
Nice.
The point is, sorry?
Nice.
Yes. And I'll tell you offline sometime where you can go for that. But the point is that you can't really destroy anything anymore, and you cannot cover up your electronic tracks. You cannot cover your past. And this stuff will come back to bite you. I'll give you another illustration. You know, Glenn Beck, a couple of weeks ago, was going on and on about the bailout and how
terrible
they were.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then of course, Media Matters caught some video of him a year ago extolling the virtues of the bailout. And how wonderful it was, and this was the right thing to do, Mr. Bush, and I think they should have been bigger.
I seem to recall that, yes.
Yes, and Media Matters caught that. As a matter of fact, I put all of this stuff that I'm talking about in on a Huffington Post article Sunday. It's in the media section. I call it Passing Oceania. We have rapidly passed by the point where anyone can control the information. Nobody, that memory hole you were talking about, that memory hole is disappearing. What we have now at our hands as citizens are the tools of transparency. That memory hole is disappearing. I don't say it's completely gone, but it has shrunk.
Well, but, you know, the I think the underlying part of my complaint or observation, I think it wasn't really a complaint, the underlying part of that was the, you know, this video has been removed for terms of use violations.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And the terms of use, what does that mean? How can YouTube pull a video?
Well, what happens is if you press the button, YouTube will disappear it, just erring on the side of caution. If you own everything about the video, YouTube will disappear it. There was a story a couple of weeks back, Matt, and I can't remember who it was. No, it was, I know who it was. It was, the Brave New Films. Brave New Films. They made mention of the fact that YouTube had to apologize to them.
Yeah.
Because they had pulled stuff on terms of use that there was, you know, and there should be some punishment. There should be some form of sanction for, frivolously using that terms of use claim, in an effort to make things disappear, because people deserve to see this these Pittsburgh police using a protester like some sort of trophy kill. You know, because it's the same kind of photograph, if I understand it correctly, grouped around the arrestee and sitting there and forcing her to kneel in front of them. It could just as well be a bunch of guys standing around the corpse of a rhinoceros on the African savanna 100 years ago.
Yeah, they think they're so clever when they take this picture. Yeah. Yeah, they think they're being so clever. Look at us.
And then somebody, and I'm guessing here, somebody, because I can't imagine it was the protester, somebody in the PR communications department of the Pittsburgh Police Department says, oh, well, just report this as a violation of the terms of use because they didn't sign a consent to be videoed.
Right. That's one of the things that really annoys me. Police officers saying, don't videotape me. What's that lipstick cam doing on your dashboard? You know, you're in public.
Well, and the other thing, of course, is that once again, as we saw in Minneapolis last summer and as we saw in Denver last summer, you have these officers done up in their riot gear, and there's not a badge to be seen, a name, a number, nothing. They act in total anonymity so that there is no accountability for anything that they do. Their faces are masked and covered. They are otherwise utterly unidentifiable. And so anybody filing a claim are
a mob.
Yeah.
When they are anonymous in that gear, they have become a mob.
As we learned 41 years ago at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, when the police were the ones who rioted?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I'm hoping somewhere that the video will be, somehow or another, that it can be found or somebody got it or captured it or something, because it needs to be spread far and wide. Because when you couple that, and I realize it may be logically unfair, I'm willing to grant that. Yeah. See, look what I'm like Robert Frost said. Robert Frost said, I'm such a liberal, I won't take my own side in a fight. I'm not quite there yet. But I will grant that, trying to draw a line between the police conduct such as that in Pittsburgh, and John Perry's column, that it might the connection might be a little bit tenuous, but the conduct connects to the ideas presented in such a way that it's almost impossible to avoid, isn't it, Matt?
That's right. You know, it pains me. What exactly is it that's this Obama problem that Mr. Perry refers to? What exactly is that Obama problem?
It's his Brown problem.
It's his Brown problem. It's what? The tyranny of a public option, green energy. What exactly is the Obama problem? And his solution for this, quote, Obama problem is, you know, a military coup. Isn't that the very definition of fascism, Bob? Authoritarianism dressed up in patriotic fervor is still authoritarianism, last time I checked?
You would be correct.
And what constitutional prerequisites are involved in a military coup? I mean, where is that written into the Constitution? What did the founders intend for military takeovers?
Well, after all, they didn't intend military takeovers. That's why they set the structure up the way they did. Oopsie! That's why the only crime that is defined within the four corners of the Constitution is treason.
That's right. The only crime in the Constitution is treason, the overthrow or the attempt to overthrow or the otherwise telling people to overthrow the government, the legitimate democratically elected government of the United States. Yeah, and on this Facebook poll that Mr. Steele was talking all over himself about, you know, this story, by the way, was broken by a blogger. Do you ever read the Political Carnival?
Yes, I do.
A major news story broken by a blogger. Citizen journalism. Picked up on the mainstream media, CNN, Washington Post, NPR, all over the TV, all over the cable channels. Broken by a woman sitting at home taking a screenshot. If your listeners don't know how to take a screenshot, I'm going to give them a very brief idea of how to do it. If you look on your keyboard over to the upper right, there's a button that says print screen, or a shortened form thereof. If you hit that button, and if you open your Paint program and paste, you will have a screenshot of whatever was on your screen just now. You have a permanent record of whatever it was you were looking at. Find that button on your keyboard. Print screen. You open your Paint program, hit paste. Boom, you have a permanent record. Citizen journalism. And speaking of citizen journalism, I was really upset by that poll, as you might imagine. And I decided to look at some other polls on Facebook. I normally avoid these kinds of applications. But, Bob, I found a poll, and here's the question. Should Obama be killed poll be arrested poll? And 19.5% of respondents on this poll had said, no, because I'm a racist dumbass.
That was one of the answers?
That's what they said. That was one of the answers, and they actually chose this answer.
Voluntarily, of their own free will, and without force or coercion.
And without force or coercion or anything. And some of the comments on here were absolutely ludicrous. I mean, I kept saying, how can you rationalize the irrational? What is wrong with you people? And I got so upset that I started a poll of my own, Bob. My poll was, which right-wing mouthpiece should be tortured? Within the hour of my posting this poll, within an hour, there was a comment on my poll from one of the same people rationalizing on this other poll. And this is what it said. This is what the comment said. Poll reported as being hate and wishing death harm on another. They can dish it out, but they can't take it.
And their little irony gene was separated from them at birth.
Exactly.
You mentioned the rodeo clown. did you know the day after he boiled the frog? He came back on, and he was complaining about a YouTube video that shows him that cuts off before he says, and the frog was plastic, or and the frog was rubber. Well, why did they do this? Why did they do that? See how they are? Glenn,
it's amazing how they rationalize it.
Glenn, your irony's calling. It your irony gene is calling. It misses you. Oh, you know, I got something for you here. You're going to love this.
Uh-huh.
You know what an air check is?
A what?
An air check.
An air check.
Yes, it's a radio term.
A radio term of an air check. Yeah, go ahead, but explain it to your listeners.
Yeah, it's like an audition reel. Way back in the bad old days when I was first starting out, we had a little cheesy cassette deck, and you brought your cheesy cassette in, and it was set up in such a way that every time you keyed the mic, it started rolling and recording so that you could listen to yourself and get better and then use your better parts, the better pieces you would put together into a reel, and you would send them off in your goal, in your quest to find the great radio job.
Aha!
You're going to love this. Because, and the reason I've been sitting around waiting to play this, and you're just the perfect person to enjoy it with, Matt, is because what we're talking about, whether it's Flush Flemball or Glenn Beck or most of these other right-wing blatherskates, we're talking about people who are just old DJs. Who have finally found, and they're crappy DJs too, because, you know, great jocking happens when you're free-forming, or as the freestyling, when you're extemporizing. That's when
great comedy happens when you are
improvising. Yeah, right. Improv is the funniest comedy.
Well, I want you to
hear, and this goes back to February of 1983.
I can't wait.
From a station in Washington, D.C. called WPGC. And it is an air check, and I'll bet you'll recognize the voice. But what I want you to hear is how bland, how banal, how unoriginal, how only able to read off a card this is. And even to this day, it's what he does. Everybody talking, well, Barack Obama's in love with his teleprompter. Ha! You know, Rush Limbaugh never says a word that hasn't been written in advance. He couldn't ad-lib his way out of a wet paper bag with a gaping hole in the side.
Which is why he never engages in debate.
And the same thing.
Go ahead.
And this, right, exactly. And the same thing applies to the clown. Check it out.
It's a Valentine's weekend at WPGC FM Morningside. Glenn Beck at midnight. The music guarantee is not in effect once again today, Saturday, because of the snow emergency. You can count on us. We're WPGC. WPGC's Valentine Weekend. Next time you hear Real Love by the Doobie Brothers, call me up at 432-1580. Be my 14th caller, and you'll qualify for the dream vacation to Hawaii from WPGC. WPGC with Glenn Beck, 1214 here at the Supremes. WPGC, an REO Speedwagon, and it's taking on a run. It's 12:21 now at Glenn Beck, and it looks like, kind of a mess outside. If you have something to do this afternoon or today, you might call before you go, because it may be canceled. It's going to be kind of a mess, yet tomorrow, Troy Kimmel told me that we should expect maybe 1 to 3 more inches, partly cloudy skies, you know, some scattered flurries throughout the day. Tomorrow, Sunday, is really the day that the snow shovel will be put to use. Mostly sunny on Sunday with the highs between 33 and 39 degrees. Currently in Washington, it's 22 degrees. The Hangar Club, in affiliation with...
make my wish come true.
PGC with Glenn Beck just kind of hanging out, kind of trapped at the station. Let's pump out the music for you all morning. It's 12:27.
That's right. Nothing but time checks, weather, and self-identification. And you, too, can be a multi-millionaire the right-wing gas bag. I would give anything. I used to have reels and reels and reels, Matt, of Hi, I'm Bob. It's 9, you know, it's 29 minutes past 9 o'clock. Welcome. That kind of crap. I used to have reels of it. I don't know what happened to it, but there were a couple of little turns on the road of life where I took the road more traveled by and wound up here. But I had, you know, every DJ has those, and they're all the same. How you rise, and so what they figured out, Glenn Beck and Rush and Hannity, they all figured out that if they could, because he starts out as part of a morning zoo crew, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This all started out with a video that was sent to me. It's Glenn Beck, an ad for the, you know, because he'd made it to mornings, and he was part of the morning zoo crew. And it involved a chimpanzee.
Yeah. A chimpanzee, yes. Which begs the question, how do you top a boiled frog? How do you top a boiled frog, Bob?
Bigger frog? Chimpanzee?
Chimpanzee, exactly.
Or how about a boiled Glenn Beck?
Well, see, there you go. That goes into the whole which right-wing mouthpiece should be tortured question. Which, by the way, the poll got pulled from Facebook, but it's on my website. Due to the magic of technology, I have that up as the top post on my website, so your listeners can go vote for which right-wing mouthpiece should be tortured.
And that is www.osborneinc, OSBORNEINK.com, osborneinc.com. Call now. Operators are standing by. See, I can still do it!
See? You can still do it. You still got it in you. It's like riding a bicycle, isn't it?
Oh, a very boring bicycle. Because there's another one of these. It's always the same crappy music too. Did you notice how much the music sucked?
Oh yeah, of course.
But there's another one of these and it's like, you know, you can't tell the difference between the two.
Are you going to play it for us?
Oh, I'm going to try to, if I can, let's see. It's going to take a minute to find. But it's the same crap. Here it is. Yeah, this is, and this is from, KQV. Oh, come on. Work with me here. Oh, I know what it is. I don't have a real player loaded on this new machine yet, but it's Flush Flimball, and it's the same thing. I think I've played it on the show before, but it's all the same stupid garbage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 1229 KQVFM.
It's that same sort of, what is that? I know that there's a word for that type of voice that you use in those reels. And what is that type of voice that they talk about? The one where you sound just slightly orgasmic about the whole idea of...
I always called it the vomit voice. I don't know what the official term is.
The vomit voice. That's
hey!
That's
a voice. Yeah, like, you know, you just... Right. Well, I can't find this anywhere. Doggone it, I hate it when a bit goes sideways. But anyway, it's the same shtick over and over and over again. And if you were to hear the Rush Limbaugh thing, you'd find that in 1975 he was still talking about with talent on loan from God and with half my brain tied behind my back. I mean, that's pretty good, making $40 million using stuff that you started using 35 years ago. Whew. Wow, this probably sounds like jealousy on my part. It really isn't.
It's a nice scam if you can get it. And speaking of scam, I wanted to tell you one more thing before I get off here. Do you know about this infomercial, the birther infomercial?
No, there is one?
Oh, yes. There's a birther infomercial. Hang on just a second. Let me grab these details real quick. Pull them up here. I'll just go and look in my old post because it's back here somewhere. Yeah, I caught this last week. It's been airing in 7 southern states. Birthers Go commercial. Here it is. Yes. Okay. The Birthers commercial, it's an infomercial. It's playing in Tennessee, Louisiana, Missouri, Alabama, Texas, Georgia, and Florida. Now, what do you note about these states, seven states that I mentioned?
Old Confederacy?
Old Confederacy. And that's where you find the most birthers, okay? The Republican Party, having become a regional party, has all of its approval down south. So, obviously, this commercial is being targeted.
Oh, you still got to send, is there a link to the audio or something like, could we run that? I mean.
Oh, if you look in my blog, Birthers Go Commercial, it's, gonna be a couple days back. I'll send you a link here in a second. But, there's actually a, YouTube, video of this, and, it is, like I say, an infomercial playing in seven southern states. And the guy who did this, his name is Gary Creep, which is just a great name. They
can't,
get right up there with Orson
can't,
Pace.
Can't pay to have these. No. You couldn't walk into a Hollywood studio and say, boss, I got a treatment for you about a guy named Creep. Get out!
TPM Muckraker has actually done some journalism on this. They determined that it was produced by Mr. Gary Creep, Mr. Creep is the executive director of birther group called the United States Justice Foundation.
Of course it is.
Of Orly Pace.
A rival?
A rival of, yes, because, you know, the birther movement has done what these little fringe movements do. They've immediately formed splinter cells among them.
Splinter? Produced, People's Front of Judea.
Go ahead.
No, I was just thinking of the Monty Python bit from Life of Brian.
Well, yeah.
People's Front of Judea, splitters. We're the People's Judean Front.
Right, exactly. Exactly. See, that's how this always happens. These violent minds always wind up splitting from each other. That's the nature of the fringe. But the program is produced by LivePrayer.com, which is a website affiliated with Bill Keller. He's a fundamentalist Christian minister who also hosts the infomercial.
Right. I remember his name.
Keller, by the way, was imprisoned in the late 80s after an insider trading conviction.
Oopsie.
LivePrayer is founded for the sole purpose of having a site in the Internet where people can go 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for prayer. The infomercial asks viewers for a $30 contribution. And this is what you get in exchange for your $30 contribution, okay? The producers send a fax to the attorney generals of all 50 states and Eric Holder, the attorney general of the United States, said fax demanding the president of the United States present his real birth certificate. Now, think about this for a second. In the age of the computer, when you call into an automated line and you put your name on a little recording.
Yeah, so far so good, right?
Someone sits there the whole next day just transcribing names into a form, okay? It's costing pennies to send all these faxes. We're going to say 5 cents is what it costs to send all these faxes to 50's attorneys general and Eric Holder. Okay, that's first off. You have the production price of making the infomercial, and this is really, really low production values. The graphics are done with Photoshop, obviously. It costs nothing to do the infomercial. All right, so on top of that, you have the costs of putting it on these small southern markets at 1 in the morning. How much do you think they actually spend on this commercial? Out of every $30 they're going to get, how much do you actually think they spend in costs? I'm going to guess probably just at most a few bucks.
Well, it depends on the stations they're showing on, Matt. You've got your own.
Huntsville, Alabama.
Yeah, and what they're buying, this is okay. Here's a little insider knowledge.
Uh huh.
If you go to buy an ad and you say, "Hey, I want my ad to run," and this is radio or TV, either way. I want my ad to run during your really hot ratings period when everybody's watching. Okay? They're going to charge you more because they're going to be able to point to their dummied up phony statistical Arbitron or Nielsen ratings and say, well, see, this is when your message is really going to get out. And so it's going to cost you more to do that. There is, however, another thing called ROS, called RUN, which stands for Run of Schedule. And if you buy ROS, you pay significantly less, and it winds up coming on at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh.
So I'm guessing they're buying ROS, and that is way cheaper. Way cheaper.
Okay, so...
I mean, let's say a station charges well, let's talk radio because that's where my familiarity is. Let's say a station in the fifth smallest radio market in America charges $50 for a 30-second ad in morning drive. That same ad might cost you $10 ROS. And you might get one in morning drive at some point because it's just going to be randomly thrown in there. But you're it's not going to You're right. Yeah, because they're not buying in New Orleans and they're not buying in the Atlanta market. Or if they are, they're buying it on the cheapest station there.
No, they're buying in rural southern markets.
Right.
Here's the thing.
Gunnersville.
Think about it. How much are they actually spending? Of every $30 they're getting, I'm going to guess that they're probably making about $27 profit off of everyone who calls in on this fax.
Or 20. I wouldn't blush at saying 20.
Okay, 20. Okay. Basically, it's a scam.
Sure it is. They all are. And let me guess, it's a 501c3 too, right?
Oh, no, no, no. They're a for-profit corporation.
Oh, well, at least they're paying taxes.
Yeah. It's actually on TPM Muckraker. There's a lot of information about this. But yeah, I just sent you a link in the email so you can go check that out for yourself.
I have it right here, and I'm going right now. So let's loading, working. Okay, yeah, this is too fun. Let's run this. Someday. Oh, this is beautiful. Oh, see, this here we are dancing about architecture again. It's video, of course, and it opens with, as you can hear, the minor key swirling strings and the ominous chords and a big red outline of Africa with question marks emanating from it.
I'm Bill Keller, founder of LivePrayer.com, and your host for this special look at where was Barack Hussein Obama really born? Was it in Hawaii, as he claims, or was it in Kenya, as his paternal grandmother claims? Of course, this issue could be resolved very simply by President Obama producing his birth certificate. For some reason, he's refused. Instead, he's posted online a certificate of live birth, which does not in any way prove he was actually born in Hawaii. What?
Well, it doesn't even prove he was actually born. He's a cyborg. He's an alien construct. He's the Antichrist. Just ask the people in New Jersey.
Oh, my God. I can't get all the way through it, man. I can't. Maybe later, but I don't think I can get all the way through it. You know what? I went and looked at my own birth certificate the other day. You know what mine says?
Certificate of live birth?
Certificate of live birth.
Okay.
And then underneath it says pod number 8675309.
Yes, at the Anchorage Biogenics Facility. Yes, I know. Like mine.
Right.
Yes, the list of my father's birthplace is Caledonia, Mars.
Oh, well, you're lucky.
my
father's birthplace is a series of indecipherable squiggles having something to do with planet Zlop.
Hey, if you want to have some fun, by the way, go to KenyanBirthCertificateGenerator.com.
Oh, I've been there. Just love it, love it, love it.
Yeah, get your own Kenyan birth certificate. All right. Well, I've been on here with you for more than a half hour. I know you got other listeners.
Oh, we're stacked up, but this was just too much fun to let go by.
I'm just going to let you go, and thanks a lot, and it's always great listening to you.
Oh, Matt, thank you for bringing this stuff to our attention. I would never have known about the commercial, and we are going to have so much fun. And of course, anybody wanting to partake of this kind of thing can always go to osborneinc.com, osborneinc.com, and you are also now a blogger at Huffington Post. I mean, that's kind of like reaching the big time, isn't it, Matt?
Well, you know, it helps to make the right connections.
I sacrificed virgins. Nothing. I couldn't get on there to save my soul.
Oh, see, we got to fix that, Bob.
Well, maybe we will. Maybe we will. As soon as I write
we'll
something.
That's
that
all
whole
right,
writing we'll something part that's a pain. But yeah.
I'll see, there all you
right. go. Take care, Matt.
All right, bye-bye, Bob.
Bye now. Matt Osborne, blogger, friend of the Horn, and one of my colleagues at Netroots Nation this past August. OsborneInc.com is a must-read. OsborneInc.com. Go there. You will be glad you did. And onward we go. Maybe.
Hi,
hey.
Sir.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, I would like to read you a paragraph written by Colonel W. Patrick Lang. He is a retired officer of U.S. military intelligence and a former Green Beret. So it's not like the guy don't know what he's talking about. This is from a posting he did on Fire Dog Lake on the 27th. But it is germane to our whole overthrow issue. It says, I listened to Talking Heads on Fox Network on Fox News Sunday and was struck by Senator Bond's apparent support of the punitive resistance of at least some flag officers to the authority of the President of the United States. Bond spoke strongly in favor of having Generals McChrystal and Petraeus explain to Congress what their opinion is as opposed to the opinion of the President, Commander-in-Chief, as to what the policy and strategy of the United States should be. And Pat Lang puts in afterwards one sentence. This is actually an incitement to mutiny.
Yeah, it is. It's a violation of all kinds of laws.
Yeah, now what I want to know is, why aren't these yahoos being arrested? I'm not talking about the guys in the Senate, because they have immunity for what they say on the
sadly, floor. Yes, yes.
Yes. But what about the guys like that idiot who produced that that Newsmax column?
I guess it's protected political speech, isn't it?
No, it's incitement to mutiny. There is also a case of a radio host, and I'll dig it up and post it. Apparently, I'm not sure. The article gives the impression that this guy is broadcasting to over the Armed Services Network, and he's in fact inciting to mutiny. He's telling these guys, you don't need to do this. You don't need to do what Barack Obama tells you to do.
Okay, now that begins to verge over into a little treatise called the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
Yeah!
And that becomes a problem.
Yeah, that's incitement to mutiny. That is called treason. And that's a no-no. Now, last I heard, a couple of people I know, real famous people, ended up going to the gas chamber for that.
Mr. Christian?
Sorry, I hear mutiny and I start thinking about it.
I'm not advocating the death penalty. What I'm thinking of is a nice long stretch where they can...
I'm thinking keel hauling.
...for their personal safety.
No, keel hauling. I like keel hauling. The barnacles
yeah,
are hell.
It comes too close to being a death penalty, though. You don't come out alive too often from keel hauling, I'm afraid.
But it sure would make a nice Facebook poll, wouldn't it? Should John Perry be keel hauled for mutiny?
The trouble is most of these creepers don't have any idea what keel hauling is.
But well, it's a teachable moment then, isn't it?
Now, have you heard I've got a couple other goodies for you. Have you heard of a gentleman by the name of John Derbyshire?
Yes.
On the National Review with Alan Combs, he has come out. He came out and said, "Women should not be able to vote. They should repeal the suffrage for women."
Yes, yes, yes.
I want.
And of course, he's one of those he's one of those out of country agitators too, right?
I want to know, is this dude married?
Where's he going? Can't be. Just can't be.
You'd be surprised the amount of them that are.
Yeah, here it is. I got the audio. He was on Alan Combs' show. And bless his heart, Alan, now that he's free of Hannity. I don't know, maybe his self-respect is coming back or something.
The case against female suffrage.
Yes.
What is the case against female suffrage?
Well, the conservative case against it is that women lean hard to the left. They want someone to nurture. They want someone to help them raise their kids. And if men aren't inclined to do it, which in the present age they're not much, then they'd like the state to do it for them.
Well, do you think women should not vote?
I'm not putting forward a political program here. I'm trying to change attitudes, Alan, you know.
When you say the case against female suffrage, the suggestion is that them voting would not be the best thing for you.
Among the hopes that I do not realistically nurse is the hope that female suffrage will be repealed.
All right, but would we be
I'll say this. If it were to be, I wouldn't lose a minute's sleep.
We'd be...
Nor would he lose a minute's sleep if the 13th Amendment was repealed, but why should we interrupt?
Better country if women didn't vote?
Yes,
probably. Don't you think so?
No, I do not think so whatsoever.
I'm clean here.
No, we would be a better country. John Derbyshire making the statement, we would be a better country if women did not vote.
Yeah, probably.
You know, Susan, I wish I lived in that world where offended spirits could come up out of the ground. Because I would like to watch Elizabeth Cady Stanton kick his ass all over this country. All
yeah,
the way back to the sceptered aisle. And when she was, you know, make it like one of those Saturday night at the Coliseum, wrestling, the death match wrestlings, where she'll, a tag team event. Elizabeth Cady Stanton whips his ass, then reaches over and gets tagged by... Susan B. Anthony, who comes in and just stomps the living crap out of him with her old ghostly granny boots.
Mm-hmm. They do it too. Now,
there's a larger issue at work here, Susan.
Yeah.
What else? You know, the veil has really been rent from the right wing holy of holies here. They want the president replaced in a military coup, and preferably killed. They want to take the vote back from women. Michael Steele won't say racism to save his. It wouldn't say racism if. Well, I'm not going to say it, but if it was happening to him.
Yeah. Derbyshire also wants to repeal the 64 Civil Rights Act.
Right, because you shouldn't try to force people to be good. You shouldn't try to force people not to lynch others. And of course, this dovetails perfectly with something that that really tall, skinny, blonde thing with the Adam's apple once said. It said, if we took away women's right to vote, we'd never have to worry about another Democrat president. It's kind of a pipe dream. It's a personal fantasy of mine. But I don't think it's going to happen. And it is a good way of making the point that women are voting so stupidly, at least single women. Somebody get me a drink.
I'd like to give her a drink of something. I won't say what.
Yes, let's don't and say we didn't.
Yeah. on a... subject to make you to make people feel somewhat better.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Alan Grayson from the great state of Florida got up in the well of the House and named the 900-pound elephant in the room. He got up there with a great big chart, and the first one was the Republican health plan. And then he pulled the next chart, and it said, die quickly. That's the Republican health plan.
Oh, and they are filled with righteous indignation. He said we want to kill people. He said we want to... Well, we've never behaved like that. We've never said anything like that. That's playing dirty. That's not fair. There's only one problem. They've said it all the time. I got this, too. This ought to be fun.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last week, Democrats released a health care bill which essentially said to America's seniors, drop dead.
Here's another place where they think they're going to save. They're going to save money by rationing care, getting you in a long line. Places like Canada, United Kingdom, and Europe, people die when they're in line.
We'll make sure we bring down the cost of health care for all Americans, and that ensures affordable access for all Americans, and it will not put seniors in a position of being put to death by their government.
But that's exactly what's going on in Canada and Great Britain today. They don't have the appreciation of life as we do in our society, evidently.
Wow, that's just one of those general Westmoreland moments, isn't it, Susan? You know, those Canadians and those Brits, they don't appreciate life like we do here in America.
Even though they actually live longer than we do.
Well, see, that's because they got that just proves it, because they're living so long they can't appreciate the long lives they got. They need for-profit health care so they can appreciate their life because it's getting shorter. Mm-hmm. Praise Jesus.
The Republicans are screaming. Originally he had planned this speech as a satire. But when they jumped on him and started screaming, you know, you have to apologize for this now, you've done a horrible thing, he doubled down. And he basically said, I'm sorry for all the dead people, all the people who have died while you people have farted around. Although he didn't put it in those particular terms.
I apologize to the dead and their families that we haven't voted sooner.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we ran that tally a couple of weeks ago, didn't we?
Applause.
Yeah, and, well, you know, he put some reality behind it. He said, he noted that 44,789 Americans die each year because they don't have health insurance, and that is a conservative estimate. That means the number is actually probably higher. And then he noted, that is more than 10 times the number of Americans who died in the war in Iraq. It's more than 10 times the number of Americans who died on 9/11. It happens every year. We should care about people even after they're born.
Yep. And I don't know about anybody else, but tomorrow, I tried today, but his office line was busy for obvious reasons. Tomorrow I will be calling either his D.C. office or his state office to congratulate him and say, hey, I ain't got much money, but I will be sending you some.
You know what? That's a speech worth paying for. It really is.
Because those are the kind of Democrats we need. The kind of Democrats who are willing to call a spade, and a freeper a freeper.
I wonder if he's signed on to H.R. 1310. You know, see, I can turn anything around, but I kind of wonder if he has. He seems, if he hasn't, he oughta.
I'm also going to be asking him to sign on to
the antitrust bill.
The antitrust bills. By the way, both of those have been, I checked today, and both of them have been referred to their various judiciary committees.
Good.
So if you want them out of committee and on...
Oh, it went to judiciary? That means we might get to watch Al Franken ask some questions about it?
Yeah.
That should be fun. Well, Susan, thank you for bringing all of this to our attention. This has been a heck of a fun segment. And we found our way halfway through the program this Wednesday evening. And so...
Hey,
another great bit of work.
You're having fun.
Pardon?
Goes by fast when you're having fun.
It absolutely does. All right, Susan, take care, dear.
I love that, Agnes.
Sure will. Bye now.
Okie doke. Bye-bye.
News Ninja Susan calling from Columbia City, Oregon. And, you know, how can I not do this? Yeah, I got I referenced my pod number, 867-5309, and immediately got an email from David in Tennessee saying, I've got your number. So how can, some things just have to happen. We'll take a little break and come back. Got a couple of lines open if you want to fill them up. You know the number, 877-443-2366. See, I almost said the other one. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. Tommy Two Tone. Somebody get me a skinny tie. That's the new wave in music. Oh, my God. But, yeah, how could I not? Well, welcome back, like you went somewhere. I gotta share something with you. The video that Matt Osborne shared with us a few moments ago, the one with Bill Keller, the guy with the bad dye job, and the hair that looks like, well, a blonde chia pet? The guy that says this kind of crazy stuff?
Is he hiding? On today's program, I have with me attorney Gary Creep, who's the executive director of the United States Justice Foundation. Gary has been on the front lines of trying to force the president to produce his official State of Hawaii birth certificate. In just a minute, you're going to meet Gary. But first, I want you to watch this very special message on how you can take action, make your voice heard on this matter. Where was President Obama born? Why does he refuse to produce his official State of Hawaii birth certificate? What's he hiding? Now your voice can be heard. You can help by going to your phone and calling 1-800-321-3247 to have your name added to a petition going to GOP leaders to force President Obama to obey the law. As a thank
What? Obey the law? What law? There's no law. But just, I had forgotten, okay? I had forgotten. I kept, you know, Matt said, Bill Keller, I said, I've heard of it. Yeah, that's the guy that I ate for lunch a few months back. Oh, what was it, maybe May? The guy who decided that because I didn't like my son being stomped in school and called faggot, that therefore I was a radical homosexual activist. Yeah, that's that guy. So we can add racist to homophobe as well, and bully, and thug, and charlatan, and the convict imprisoned in the late 1980s after an insider trading conviction. Yeah. Founded Bill Keller Ministries after attending Jerry Falwell's Godly and Holy Liberty University. Of course, so did Reverend Gary Aldridge, and we got a song about him. It involves the Montgomery. You may have heard it somewhere along the way. Onward. Well, let's see. Check the email bag first. Come on, Bob. Yeah, just checking in. One of the commenters to Matt Osborne's poll over at OsborneInc.com, our pal Marty, says, what about Paul Harvey or Mel Gibson on which right-wing gas bag should be tortured? Of course, if you read Bart Cop, as you should, you would know that he has Bart Cop has long held out that that Paul Harvey is a nasty old horse molester. So onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Brian from New Hampshire.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
How are you? Yeah, I don't know how to follow up from it. Your last two great callers and guests there, your regulars there, they have some great stuff there. But I wonder, earlier in the show, you were talking about these Happy Talk morning radio DJ idiots, these lobotomy malpractice cases there. Back when you were in radio, they actually had to have an original thought and think at least somewhat. It's now it's such a corporate cesspool that it's disgusting. But I'm wondering if you ever heard of a website called oldradiofun.com.
Yeah, I have.
Okay, that's what they got some. I remember a guy who put all these people to shame. A guy, I got two of his MP3 CDs for, it's about 40 hours total of his programming. Long John Neville, from the late 50s into the 60s, was his big time about UFOs and all that, too. But it was very thoughtful. He had New York intellectuals there. Were at the WOR studios. It was very thoughtful radio. Very rare for a commercial break. It's not like the where they totally dominate with these idiot spots there, the radio of today. Oldradiofun.com. It also has the Bob and Ray shows. They're $4.99 per MP3 CD. If you want, it's a young guy.
Oh God, you can't beat Bob and Ray.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's we're talking real comedy, real thought-filled comedy. You know, and the only is something might come close to that on TV was like the early years, the early '60s. The Dick Van Dyke Show had a bit of that kind of, you know, urbane and sophisticated and tasteful humor.
Your show of shows.
Yeah, sure. Oh, sure. But I wasn't born until late in '58. I wish I had been alive during the time when the Long John Neville was live on the air. It must have been a magic moment there. It has a great. This is great MP3 CDs. Like I say, it's a guy named Sean in San Antonio, Texas, runs it. Just go to oldradiofun.com. He's having a huge sale on all kinds of, you know, a Space Patrol, all the other kind of radio.
Oh, wow.
Andy Griffiths, who started out on radio, people don't know that. Father Knows Best started out as a radio show. Fibber McGee and Molly, the great Gildersleeve, all of that. But what I really, I wanted to talk about, really is looking for the best we can for today. We always think of the like a time like 1958, except for race relations. I think of it as maybe it was compared to we weren't yet in Vietnam, and maybe it was more the good old days. We had a real Republican named Dwight Eisenhower. I disagreed with him on the you know overthrowing the government of Iran and then overthrowing the Guatemalan elected government. But otherwise, Ike was, you know, he's pretty stable Republican that with a sane man, unlike people that came along later. I think from Ronald Reagan onwards, our country has gone downwards to they just totally bought the libertarian and the.
Well, I think you really have to go back a little, go back into the late 60s with Nixon, Brian, because
yeah.
That's where you get the Lewis Powell memo. And
okay.
Just go online and look up Powell memo. And you'll see, and you will see the genesis of all of this stuff. And something else that was brought to my attention by our buddy David in Tennessee earlier today, that you might find interesting, you can also look up, and there's an entry on it at, Wikipedia.
Uh-huh.
Look up Houston Plan, H-U-S-T-O-N Plan, Houston Plan. And what you'll realize is that you'll see the truth in something that I have repeatedly asserted. In that, insofar as the Republican Party doesn't have new ideas, they recycle hateful old ones.
The Southern strategy going back to after the defeat of Gore.
Right, and the and the Powell memo and the Southern strategy and the Houston plan, they're all sort of it's a hateful little triptych there that is just getting recycled and recycled and recycled and becomes more virulent, more poisonous, more hateful with each reincarnation.
Okay, and what I have to say, one splinter group of that hateful are these birthers. I've just gone over Newsweek, their online column about General McChrystal in Afghanistan there. It's called McChrystal's War. And one thing I can say about after reading about General Stanley McChrystal, I got a lot of huge disagreements with him and how he helped further along the Bush-Cheney policy of targeting often innocent people were killed, but they, you know, they helped get people like Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the head of al-Qaeda in Iraq, allegedly. In 2000, they did that without torturing the former Iraqi insurgents. I forget the man's name, young man, who said that we increased so much the casualties for American troops in Iraq by torturing that the war got out. It would have gotten out one way or the other by torturing the captured Iraqis and others captured in Afghanistan and in Guantanamo and at all over Iraq and at the Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. That's what brought on the tens and thousands of recruits, especially from the Arab Gulf states, the real suicide bombers, the really devout Wahhabist Muslim believers who just seeing that there's so the disrespect of young Islamic men and Iraqi people of all backgrounds, they came in there in droves and they increased the rate of terrorism against our troops. It was something George W. Bush would know nothing about. His brave service during the Vietnam War and the Texas Air National Guard, he even bugged out from there. But they captured Zarqawi by making friends in coming to this, you know, realizing these Iraqi insurgents were secularists, much like the decades they had been under Saddam Hussein, who was a secular enemy of Osama bin Laden, and that they wanted al-Qaeda in Iraq out of there, so they finally were able to get the location of Zarqawi and take him out by not torturing, but by actually interviewing and treating them as actual fellow human beings, prisoners of war, whatever, giving them basic respect. And that's how they got Zarqawi with an anti-torture policy. But he was leading the Special Operation Command at that time, General McChrystal, when they got Zarqawi in 2006. But also, he's an interesting guy, this Stanley McChrystal. I got to say, he eats only one meal a day, works out obsessively every morning at 5 a.m., is so free of body fat that he looks gaunt. Lately, as commander of the war in Afghanistan, he's become...
Yeah, it's kind of skeletal. I remember noting that to myself when I saw a photo of him.
That's for sure.
Right.
Yeah, he's become a kind of Zen warrior, preaching that often, quote, the shot you don't fire is more important than the one you do to his troops there in Afghanistan. And they wrote over another story where the American convoys, you know, especially the private contractors, apparently, those guys, you know, the same... It's a lot more than just Blackwater. They were speeding at 50, 60 miles an hour through the downtown streets of Kabul, you know, with old ladies walking to the market, that kind of, where the speed limit's supposed to be 20 miles an hour. McChrystal got out of his Jeep and stopped them and chewed them out individually and as a unit for doing it. And just, he said that you'll obey the speed limits of Kabul in the city limits there. And that kind of, he goes also, he had another great quote there. if he said to his men there, some unit gathered there in Afghanistan, if you encounter 10 Taliban fighters and kill two of the 10, you then soon will have 20 new Taliban as an enemy, because just from the...
Well, right, and you know, these
are angry for the loss of those people.
Right, because these are old concepts, Brian.
Absolutely, and this is...
what he's describing there was first put into mythologic form,
right,
by the ancient Greeks. You know.
Oh, I know.
You know, the Hydra, for Christ's sakes, you cut off one head, it grows three. You know, that myth was not about a giant snake and a hero. That was a myth about how one deals with one's enemies. That's how parabolic. You know, it's a parable.
It's an exponential growth of new enemies, which the war profiteers love, but a general on the ground, this guy McChrystal, understands that it's bad for the troops on the ground, and he's asking, he does say, you know, he's saying that the only possibly win is to get those 500,000 troops. That was classified in his latest report there, but the over 5 years, and it's not all American troops, 100,000 per year about, but he doesn't really want that. He wants maybe something like 40,000, but even then he's saying that we have to greatly enlarge and really break in the training of the Afghan nationals, their own nation state of Afghanistan, that long-suffering country, God love them, to have their own army and their own people protecting the peaceful daily life, hopefully, that we can hope can someday break out in that poor country again. And McChrystal, his career at West Point and all that, it's very interesting. But at the same time, my tax dollars, America's tax dollars, we can't afford him to play Lawrence of Arabia in Afghanistan anymore. This is what he's talking about. It could just as well have been a general in South Vietnam in the early to mid 1960s there, just as a build up was starting there. There's a great piece there by a writer for the New York Times. I forget the man's name though, but he had been there throughout the. He was finally killed in a tank battle in the mid early 1970s. His name was Paul something. His first name was Paul. But he talked about this. He could be just the same thing, talking about the South Vietnamese. Well, they don't really have the will to fight. The North, the NVA and the Viet Cong will put up with all kinds of, they'll eat rat meat, and that's a feast for them. They'll put up with all kinds of, you know.
Right, and imagine if you will, Brian.
The South Vietnamese army is still, he was basically admitting that it was a creation of the United States, the world's sole superpower, I would argue, even at that time. But during the Cold War, United States, they solely created the South Vietnamese army, basically, and they really did not have, as a people, the will to fight like the Viet Cong and the South, and the leader who was a World War II ally named Ho Chi Minh in North Vietnam. He died in September 1969, but he when his people marched into Hanoi in I believe it was August, September 1945, he quoted directly many lines
from the Declaration of Independence. Yes. And Harry Truman, again, it was this, you mentioned earlier the coup against Mossadegh in Iran, Brian. Yeah. Harry Truman didn't want anything to do with Vietnam. Yeah. Harry Truman didn't want anything to do with the coup in Iran and said no to both of them. And then Eisenhower came into office, and in both instances, you had his old pal de Gaulle leaning on him about Vietnam, and you had his old pal Churchill leaning on him about Iraq, and look what you get.
And then you got the Dulles brothers mixed in with that, and the
sure, other, exactly.
The pistol with the CIA, the
but,
dirty...
But you bring up a very important point, Brian, and that is that... there is not a dime's worth of difference between the South Vietnamese army and the Afghanistan army that we're trying to create. Okay? Yeah. And for the same reasons. Secondly, what you talk about engendering more killing and more hatred and more militancy, what McChrystal said about if you find 12 Taliban, you kill two, you'll wind up with 20. Well, that multiplies exponentially if you take a non-combatant wedding party and hit it with a Hellfire missile from an unmanned Predator drone. And that's all we've done over there.
He's piloted by our young men in Las Vegas at the air base or something there in the near Area 51 or something that kind of matches a policy that's not based on the reality, the facts on the ground. It's out of this world. It's insane. They're still continuing the George W. Bush war profiteer friendly policy, and I don't. But at the same time, I've gotten at least a bit of, you know, at least just General McChrystal. He's a well-read man. He's a real military professional. He says he will not resign even if President Obama disagrees with his entire recommendation. He will not resign, you know, unless he's told to resign by the Commander in Chief Barack Obama. He says that, and he is nothing like the, you know, these splinter groups, these birthers who don't even know, they don't even want to admit that the man was born in an American state of Hawaii and is our president and is a full-fledged citizen. Has served the country well as a throughout his career, was the best law student at Harvard Law School, the best law school on earth, arguably, according to Lawrence Tribe, the professor there, was Barack Obama, and was the most independent thinker that he had ever had there at Harvard Law School.
Right, and Tribe is no slouch.
That's right. And we should be thankful to have a president that with all these qualities, even though he's too far to the right for me, he's a lot saner than any McCain-Palin ticket or Huckster B, whatever name for 2012 you want to put up there. I think Lou Albano is still alive. Some professional wrestling champion would do better, and I take them more realistically. Or Jesse Ventura was somebody who is at least as an independent thinker compared to, there's something going on between the ears compared to this latest crop of Republicans. This is a, what is it?
Well, Brian, that's because they are motivated first, foremost, and thoroughly by, you know, racism and bigotry will literally eat away at your brain. I think there are actually studies about that.
And
that is what motivates these creeps, and because that's what motivates these creeps, that is why they are as evil and hateful as they are.
And that's
why they are not contemplative conservatives. I know what that is, but this ain't it.
No, it's William Buckley has passed away. And in that same thing, then I'll get off your phone there and let you get the other callers. But, you know, William Sapphire, you were talking about, he passed away there recently. And I've regularly read the New York Times. I can't afford it more than ever now. It's gone up so much as the hard copy paper. I read it online a lot. But, in his piece there, they're talking about the events of September 11th itself, that Tuesday morning. William Sapphire was in the bunker, and he's the source that says a threatening message received by the Secret Service was relayed to the agents with the president on Air Force One, that Air Force One is next and that Angel is next, too, was the code words that only the Secret Service was supposed to know. And Sapphire was told of this by Karl Rove, that this was and that they didn't get up air protection for President Bush's Air Force One plane, and Dick Cheney was in charge of that until after it was nearly 12 noon before they finally got up the air protection. Because this is from the book by a Synthetic Terror. I don't agree with everything he writes, but Webster Griffin Tarpley, he's a well-read man who actually searches out the real truth and the real facts.
Well, I can believe Karl Rove making something like that up, Brian, because you got to remember that when Karl Rove,
that's true too.
when Karl Rove was
the source,
when Karl Rove was George Bush's fixer when George was governor of Texas, there was this incident where Karl breathlessly called the Texas law enforcement authorities and had them come a running, okay, to the governor's office, claiming that a bug had been found inside George Bush's office. And the interesting thing about that bug, Brian, is the fact that the bug had a battery on it that couldn't possibly have lasted longer than Karl Rove had been in the room.
That's right.
And then, of course, there is the ongoing suspicion that Karl Rove was the leaker to, what was his name, Hatfield, the guy who wrote Fortunate Son?
Yeah, and then he strangely passed away by suicide after that book came out in the summer of 2001. That was a strange time. But he has other sources for this too. Tarpley's book there, Inside the Bunker, besides William Sapphire. But I know what you're saying about Karl Rove. I wouldn't trust him if I'm looking at a blue sky and he says the weather's going to be clear the rest of the day. I get my rain gear on right away. You know, it just, he's not to be trusted. But again, it's like I say, this Webster Tarpley, he does search out the truth. He's not just a sensationalist, even though he's appeared on panels with Alex Jones. He's an actual scholar, so he does actually research and source these things out the way our journalists used to do that in our major media. And also, I just want to get on the people that, if they want to, I still have to recommend that the latest Loose Change DVD. Those young men have done a great, I believe it's the best one they've ever done. I wrote a piece on it at opednews.com. That's yesterday's piece there. Brian O'Moore is my pen name for the, but anyways, if they want something that's really professionally written, that's a better piece. Paul Craig Roberts written a great piece there too, from yesterday about, where a nation state is just, it's led and informed by liars. Paul Craig Roberts, he was a former Reagan Republican.
Oh, I'm familiar with Paul Craig Roberts, yes.
He can't take what's going on today with the government. He says in this piece there about Iran, supposedly, now they have more evidence that they beefed up their military nuclear program. Mr. Roberts says, as there is no real case against Iran, Obama took a script from Bush's playbook and fabricated one. And he sums it up. He's not nearly the windbag that Colin Bryant is.
No, but
I'll let you go there.
You bring a lot to a very short amount of time, Brian, and I appreciate it.
Okay, you hang in there, sir. And who do I pray to get rid of the swine flu? Is it St. Joseph or what? I remember as a kid, St. Joseph aspirin.
You know, it might be St. Oscar of Meyer. I'm not sure.
That's right. America is so corporatized today, it might just be that. But I'll let you go. There's another great piece there, too, by Bob Fitrakis at opednews.com. You know Rob Call, the guy who runs...
Oh, yeah, I know Rob. Yeah, I know Rob great, personally.
Another great progressive patriot there. And he sums up why they're going after the group Acorn, because they registered the actual poor people and minority and rural poor, urban poor, and they realize they have a right to vote. They have a right to exercise their citizens' right in spite of what these Republicans have tried to pull on them. They remain the real criminals. Their Jim Crow tactics, they happen in states like Ohio as well, too. I'll let you go.
All right. Take care, Brian.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Calling from New Hampshire, that's Brian, and go look up his writings at opednews.com. There's a lot of good stuff to be read there. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Cossack, what's up, brother?
I have a quote for you and a short addendum.
Okay.
The quote is, a whore should be judged by the same criteria as other professionals offering services for pay, such as dentists, lawyers, hairdressers, physicians, plumbers, etc. Is she professionally competent? Does she give good measure? Is she honest with her clients? It is possible that the percentage of honest and competent whores is higher than that of plumbers and much higher than that of lawyers, and enormously higher than that of professors. And my addendum is, and incomparably higher than that of politicians. You know where that comes from.
You know, I want to say Mark Twain, but...
Notebooks of Lazarus Long.
Ah, well, close in its own way. Yeah, Robert A. Heinlein.
Correct. And the reason I brought that up, you heard about our friend, David Vitter, correct?
Well, it depends on which part.
He's been jumping all over Acorn. About.
Oh, yeah, yeah, he's been having an Acorn, right. Yeah, he's been having an Acorn-gasm.
And you heard what Crew did.
No.
They're calling for an investigation of him in D.C. and in New Orleans for soliciting prostitutes, which is illegal in both cities.
Oh, do let's. it's just hell when that double-sided blade swings back at you.
Hypocrisy is such a bitch.
As is karma.
God. I mean, first of all, if I were Vitter, God help me, his soliciting of prostitutes doesn't bother me. It's the hypocrisy.
Exactly. You know, I personally, you know, that's one of those places where I am a civil libertarian. Things like cannabis, prostitution, I think should be legal.
Yeah.
And taxed.
I mean, first and foremost, believe it or not, there are not every woman who is engaging in prostitution is being forced to do so. Many of them have good reasons for it. I know because I've had several friends that were ladies of the evening. And they're thoroughly delightful people.
And it paid better than being ladies of McDonald's.
Correct. This one girl I knew in New Orleans, strangely enough, real sweetheart, real, just, you know, one of the sweetest.
If you say heart of gold, we're going to have a problem. You know, cliches go only so far on this program, yeah. Cossack.
Well, true. She did. She did have a heart of gold.
See? Knew you would.
But, you know, after our business was transacted, we were just lolling about, we talked. Isn't that strange? And it turns out she was working on her doctorate, and she couldn't get funding. And this way she says, look, I'm down here for 18 months. When I'm done, I have enough to pay for my... I'll be able to go back up to, I think it was Minnesota, and get my doctorate, have it all paid for.
There you go.
And she says, and believe it or not, most, you know, I don't run across that many horrid people. A lot of them, well, she just like, you are one of the best. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, well,
I appreciate that.
Okay, this Cossack promotional moment.
But, no, I mean, you know, we actually became friends and hung out. Very nice lady, like I said. Yeah. But there was a reason why she was doing what she was doing. And it made sense.
And there's a code of sorts involved, isn't there, Cossack? I mean, they don't disclose their Johns. But there's also a caveat to that, unless the John starts running around saying stuff. And since it's a criminalized enterprise and operates outside the law, that code is fluid and is non-enforceable to anybody except the practitioner of the ancient art.
Exactly.
So David Vitter has run around and said, well, that part of my life is over with.
Yeah.
And my wife has forgiven me, and it's nobody else's business.
Well, one of the ladies in New Orleans begs to differ. Yeah. And she pointed out, yes.
I don't know if I'm up for the details based on the rumors I've heard.
Well, she pointed out, yes, we saw each other regularly for over a six-month period. I won't get into the details. Kind of messy. But
kind of knew you were going to, see, you're going to try to work it in there one way. You can't be trusted, Cossack.
I'm not going to go any further than that. But she did.
Yeah, let's don't say we didn't.
But, I mean, really, what is with these people? You know,
well, just, you know, look, if we've been paying attention to the coverage of that book, what's his name, Jeff Charlotte, The Family?
Mm-hmm.
We know that they think it's okay for them to do this because they are better than us.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of a refined, modernized version of a really sickening sort of Calvinism.
Right. You know who a few years back was hanging out with family? Oddly enough.
Hillary?
Yep, her.
Yeah, I know. That's disturbing in the extreme.
I think so. I mean, she's a little piece of work, too. I mean... How can you hang out with these people and not want to take a bath in a vat of hydrochloric acid afterwards?
Well, you know what? It's you know, I said earlier, Cossack, that they've been separated at birth from their irony gene. So too with the shame gene, because they ain't got none. And that's my only explanation for it.
I mean, these people are. Seriously sick. Outrageously sick.
Yeah, let's see. There's a scientific term for it, I think. I think it's called icky. They're icky.
Yeah. I mean, you know, speaking of sick, I think we have had a wonderful demonstration this last week of who many of these public servants actually are there to service. And it certainly isn't their constituency. Yeah. I mean, Jello J managed to show everyone, you know, which side are you on? Oh, I'm on the side of the money.
Show me the money. Yeah, just cue up Jerry Maguire.
I mean, has anything really changed since Credit Mobilier?
You know, I'm saying no.
I mean, with rare exception, all those people need to go. I mean, they need to go now.
Yeah, they need to go a while back.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, there are a few exceptions. But
well, you know, one of the things that was pointed out to me after Susan called in about Congressman Grayson, this needs to be mentioned, and that's your congressman, isn't it?
Not directly mine, but he's in our state. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought maybe it was your district, but
yeah. No.
One of the things, you know, Susan's right. What he said took guts, and kudos to him for doing it. But I'm informed by Andy in New Jersey that he is not a signatory to H.R. 676, Medicare for All.
Huh.
So he needs to be.
Yeah.
He needs to get on. He needs to get on board that bandwagon.
I had to drop him a line.
Probably wouldn't be a bad idea.
You know, I mean, this thing is, Bob, he is an ex-prosecutor, and that was what he did, was ferreting out, white-collar criminal. And he is not amused at all by the crap coming down. You know, they're sitting there trying to do the old soft shoe, and he's saying, uh-uh, not buying it. No, no. Ain't working like that. He's just, you know, he keeps on saying, I want you to produce those records. Let me see who's getting paid these outrageous amounts of money. Why? How? Well, we don't have to show you. Excuse me, you took TARP money. You have to show me. I want to see. You got to show me what you did with the money the American public put into your hot little hand. And he's got subpoenas out.
Oh, really?
He's not joking around. No, he really. He is not joking around.
Well, I wish him all the best.
I mean, big boy too. Jesus.
Yeah, it looks like he maybe played some football once upon a time or something.
God, looks like a freaking lineman.
Well, what I just said.
Holy crap! Don't want to meet him in a dark alley. No.
Well, Cossack, good hearing from you, brother.
Yeah, it was fun being with you.
All right. Well, we will talk soon, I hope.
Yep, right.
And, give him a call tomorrow.
And chicken soup. Lots of chicken soup.
I think I need to be immersed by the heel in it.
It doesn't really help, though.
Oh, it does. And I would, you know what, I may have to slip off to the grocery store tomorrow and get a chicken and make some with lots of garlic and black pepper in it.
Oh, yeah.
And if I can get my hands on it, maybe a little bit of, Lottie recommends, maybe a little bit of asafoetida.
Yeah.
And, you know, Lottie mentioning that in the chat room was the first time I'd seen that word used since reading Mark Twain. There's Mark again. Well, Cossack, have a good night, brother.
All right, you too.
All right, take care. Later. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye-bye.
The Cossack calling from the wilds of North Florida, and on we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I just want to make a few comments about some of the calls, and then I wanted to give you a little news off of The View.
Okay, do please.
I'll do that first.
That is your job. You are The View correspondent.
Yeah. Well, Joy Behar's got a new show on CNN. She comes on after Nancy Grace.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I called her a blockhead the other day, but I feel that way about a lot of Democrats in public office.
It happens.
You know what I'm saying? They think, oh, this person's nice, and they're not. But they're like us. They have to learn the hard way sometime. But
true enough.
She had, they were telling about, she had Janine Garofalo and Babe Buchanan on at the same time.
Oh, that must have been a merry chase.
Yeah, and they were talking about gun control. Of course, you know how Babe feels about that.
Oh, yeah, everybody needs a gun.
And I love Janine Garofalo. I love these people that they know their facts, you know?
Yeah, smart people are fun.
Right. And she says, well, said, if you were in a town alone or whatever and you saw this gang of black people with guns, said, don't you think you'd change your mind about gun control? I thought that was
great. How did that play?
I thought it was great. I must say. Oh, they laughed about it. You know, see, Elizabeth hadn't come back yet.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. Got it.
And I'm glad to hear we got a good speaking representative down here in Florida.
Yeah. Have you looked around? Where is he from?
I don't know. I think somebody said Orlando. I know that Guy played his clip, you know, on his show today.
Right.
And I think he said Orlando. You're not mine. You know who mine is, don't you?
Oh, no.
Putnam.
Yeah, I remember now, yeah.
Yeah, I got an email from him about the medical thing.
And did they tell you that the liberals were going to have you killed?
Oh, among other things. But
I wish we were kidding. We're not.
I know. But it is good to know that we do have a white person. I guess he's white. I don't know. Maybe he's not. But it seems to me like the only ones in Congress sometimes that stand up for we the people or the black caucus, you know.
Yeah, them and Dennis Kucinich.
But, yeah, God bless Dennis Kucinich, yeah. But anyway, then I wanted to say something about Dwight Eisenhower.
Okay.
Your friend called. And I lived during that time. And in the South, it was pretty bad. And because, you know, we were still lingering on with the Depression and the Civil War. And I think a lot of people that are so far, you know, the Confederacy is because of the way we were treated. Now, I was taught, my history that I was taught was that Lincoln was going to help, kind of like a airlift for Berlin or whatever, you know, for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that once he got, you know, assassinated, that was all done away with to punish the South. I don't know if that is correct, but that's what I was taught.
Well, there's a lot of truth in that. His Reconstruction plans were vastly different from the Reconstruction as it was enacted by, the radical Republicans.
Yeah. But what I wanted to say was now, I'm not going to knock Eisenhower, but during that time, we had the hearings, you know, the American, was it Communist McCarthy hearings?
Right, right.
We had the electrocution of the Rosenbergs. And that their name, Rosenberg?
Yes, Julius Methel.
And Eisenhower would not interfere. We had the Hungarian Revolution. Now, I've not heard anybody talk about that. But during that time, I mean, we were a very patriotic country, as far as I knew. I mean, I was really, you know, we were taught that in school, and we were taught that what the evils of communism were and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, we had the Voice of America and another, and they say, revolt, revolt, revolt. It's kind of like the way Bush did the Iranians, you know, probably.
Regime change.
I mean, Iraqis, yeah.
Yeah, regime change.
And that we would help them. Well, have you ever read about the Hungarian Revolution?
Yes, yes. And the fact that we didn't?
And we didn't. And they won. They won with Molotov cocktails and all. But the Russians were coming with those huge tanks. And they were begging for help. It was one of the saddest things.
And we hung them out to dry.
We hung them out to dry. And I'll tell you, I don't know the name of it, but if anybody is interested in history, I would recommend reading about the Hungarian Revolution. And there's some man that was on C-SPAN a couple of years ago, and I got it written down somewhere about that. And, like, if anybody is a historical buff, that is point on. So it wasn't. And another thing, I know you've already mentioned it, is, of course, segregation.
Yep.
I mean, that's a big thing. And I know Eisenhower did a little bit to try to help, but that was big time. And in the South, we just didn't have, we hardly had any unions. And my folks supported unions, and when they did have a union, they supported it. My folks walked the line, you know, they went out and everything. But it was really rough down in the South.
Yes.
It really was.
Yes, it was.
But, you know, I think people have this romantic idea about that, you know, it was so idealized. But if it was idyllic, then why did we, you know, young people start protesting the hypocrisy? There's so much hypocrisy. And another thing, you know, that like they would say, I remember a lot of girls that I went to school with, of course not little sweet me, not unmoted.
No.
Being facetious. But there was a lot of 8-pound preemies born. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, not my daughter. My daughter's not going to have a baby out of, you know, be pregnant and get married. You know, that was really a slanderous thing back then. And I remember the first girl I knew about that kept her baby. And that was like, woo, she kept that baby. You know, that did have one out of wedlock.
Right.
But there was a lot of 8-pound preemies born, a lot of them.
And continues to be. I don't know if you saw the story or not, Juanita, but even Texas has had to look up and confessed recently that their abstinence-only education policy just isn't really getting the job done.
Well, you know, I really believe, and I know so in my own life, not knowing is not right. And not knowing facts, it would save a lot of people a lot of trouble. Now I was always a curious person. I wanted to know, and there just wasn't nothing to tell you much. And to me, I think it's so wrong. I think you need the facts on the table. And so you avoid a lot of problems. I really believe that. And I like I said, I think I said the other day about when my son started school, we went to the PTA, and they were talking about having sex education in schools. The PTA was all against it, had all the pediatricians aligned against it. And
yeah, because we like little children not knowing about sex and going out and picking up a, you know, a sexually transmitted disease. That's a good thing.
Well, we had, like, out here where I live, we had, like, these girls 13, 14 years old, just seemed like tons of them, having babies. And I'm not talking to them, and, you know, people say, oh, that was black people. Nah.
No, sorry.
No. I know plenty of young white girls, never been married even, but they got a ton of babies.
Any star in the East or wise men on the doorstep. No.
No. Mm-mm. But, okay, I want to say one more thing, too, about a caller that said something about prostitutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what Jesus said about it, prostitutes.
Which part?
Well, what he told the Pharisees, the self-righteous people, the people that knew all the rules and regulations, and they were right. He said that the prostitutes and the Pharisees and the publicans, which were, I guess, the same name as sinners, would go into the kingdom of heaven before they would.
Yeah, and they didn't like
and
that.
They
didn't like that
word. No,
they didn't like that dime's worth.
No. And I'm telling you, I tell you, you have to watch out thinking you're really a good and righteous person. And, you know, when Jesus said that about prostitutes, and who did he hang around with?
Publicans, prostitutes.
Prostitutes.
The fun people. The fun people.
Yeah. Real people. Real people. Not funny people. But anyway. anyway, so much for my meanderings. I hope somebody, I think some people appreciate my historical things. And
no, we love it, Juanita. We do, but we do, because I get emails about you, Juanita, talking about how real you are.
Well, I like to. I hope so. I hope so. I want to be real for real, whatever. And anyway, I just want to comment about some of the callers, and I got one more thing about. I finally figured out who I want to see tortured.
Oh,
you said this was people announcing, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, over there.
Of course, I first thought of Glenn.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think Hannity.
Yes.
He needs to come back and help those soldiers out.
Yes, he does. I mean, exactly? Why is Sean Hannity stiffing the troops?
Yes. Right. He's cheating them.
They need that money.
So don't you think that's a good choice, Hannity?
I think that's a beautiful choice.
Now, if you weren't talking about an announcer, so I would say
Grover Norquist.
Well, who was our defense guy that was?
Rumsfeld. Yeah, Rumfield.
I would just like to see him forced to stand in one.
Yeah, because he bragged about the fact that he could do that for 8 to 10 hours. He did that. He worked on his feet all the time.
You know that he wasn't in one position. That's what people. I know that's what he said. Then why do it to them if it doesn't bother them? Wouldn't bother them.
Yeah, that's no big deal. It's a walk in the park.
Yeah. But anyway, well, listen, I'm going to let you go, and you keep getting better.
We're trying. I think I relapsed a little bit today.
I hope you can get some good chicken.
Oh, I do, too.
Yeah, chicken soup just ain't what it used to be.
Well,
I'm sorry.
I know. Well, unless you make it yourself.
Well, if you make it yourself, still it's not. You know, it's the chickens, the way they're raised.
Well, that's true, too. And when Mama's not making it for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, that does make the
Because it's made with love.
Oh, yeah. Well, you better believe it.
But Agnes and I have to go to a hearing about the mountaintop removal permit tomorrow morning.
Yeah,
and we'll probably stop by the grocery store on the way back, and I'll get some onions and garlic and maybe a chicken. And who knows? Maybe I'll get some matzo ball mix, too. I might make a pretty mean pot of matzo balls.
Mean pot of what?
Matzo ball soup.
Oh.
Yeah, Jewish soul food.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty...
I thought that's what you said, but I wasn't...
Yeah, well, I'm good.
Wasn't sure. Yeah.
It's all in covering the pot and letting them steam.
Yeah.
That's where the magic is.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll get corrected. 180, you have yourself a wonderful evening.
Okay, you too.
All right, take care.
Night-night.
Bye now. View correspondent... Juanita, calling from Central Florida. And it's about 16 minutes past the hour. See, old DJ habits die hard. Got to tell you what time it is. Never mind the fact that there's a clock on the phone, a clock on the computer, a clock on the wall, a clock on your... There's a lot of clock, but, you know, old Bob, got to tell you what time it is. Because you might just be in one of those places where there ain't one. And it makes it extra fun if you're listening as a podcast, because then I'm completely wrong, and it could be completely confusing. And speaking of bad DJing, here, just a little bit more of this. Because this is just too much fun not to. Come on, where'd you go, Glenn? Well, see, he's not cooperating. All right, this is strange. Don't know why Glenn isn't working now. Oh, well. No, never mind. Doesn't matter. I was going to play you some more bad Glenn Beck air check. Him of the skinny necktie. But anyway, we'll take a little break on this prayer meeting Wednesday and come back with more of your calls if you are so inclined. I've also got some... I got a little bit of historical perspective, and you know how I am about historical perspective. From one of my favorite human beings ever to call himself an American. So that's coming your way. Coming my way, too, for that matter. And I'm going to enjoy the heck out of it. Little tune sent along by John Fox for this prayer meeting Wednesday. We'll be back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. Really, and we need your support. This is The Horn. Little crowded house, courtesy of John Fox, as he notes, the best New Zealand band that Australia ever claimed for its own. There goes God. Now, this is, of course, Prayer Meeting Wednesday. This is, of course, The Horn. I am, of course, Bob. Everything is a matter of course this evening, I would assume. So, we got about 35, 40 minutes left of great conversation in the program. And I'm going to go back to the phones in just a second, that I promise. But I want to share something with you. I mentioned earlier that, indeed, that Bill Keller freak who's now running birther ads, and I got to send this audio over to Matt Osborne. It might work nicely underneath his posting of the birther ad from Bill Keller. I had the opportunity to tear Bill Keller a new one some time back, and just thought you might enjoy this trip down memory lane, because it is so much fun.
King Obama.
Now, bear in mind what we got here. The first thing we're going to hear is some of Bill Keller's outright outrageous, unmitigated hatefulness, and then we'll hear the fun.
Obama and the radical homosexual lobby, but I know more about persecution than most people ever understand. The homosexual lobby has been masterful at finding renegade judges. The radical homosexual agenda. Blah, 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 blah. Give me a break. You know, everybody wants to point to Matthew Shepard. You're off the wall. You're a lunatic. That's why. Oh, go. Forget it, Bob. Come on, man. Don't be an idiot.
Don't call me an idiot, mister. I've got about 100 IQ points better on you, and I know your type. You can't cure homosexuality because it is not a disease.
It's a choice.
It is not a choice. When did you choose to be straight, Pastor?
You don't have to choose to be normal.
You just said it was a choice, you hypocrite.
I suggest you go pick up the Bible and go read it.
I've forgotten more of the Bible than you know, Pastor.
Here's what we've got. We've got a homosexual activist that's called in your program.
Did you just call me gay? Pastor, I want to kiss you real good. I want to snuggle with you, Pastor. I want to get all naked and roll around with you because I'm a gay homosexual activist. Yeah, that's your Bill Keller. That's your birther. So I just thought you might enjoy that. Let's go back to the phones. Lee is joining us from Texas. Hey, Lee, welcome to the program.
Shit, you pretty much, I should have made crib notes because I just suddenly realized, listen to that dude, I didn't have enough breadcrumbs to get back home. good evening from where everything is bigger, including the knuckles we drag across the ground, sir.
Good evening, Lee.
Almighty. And by the way, to steal that from Bart Cop somewhat, and I know you've got a guy that does music down there, and I can't remember who it is. He's fantastic, though. Somebody needs to spoof Knuckle Drag USA to Jeannie Sue Riley's tune.
Oh, Harper Valley PTA?
Yeah, sir.
Anytime you want to do that, you're more than welcome to do it.
Right, because it's like it was such a good song to begin with. Okay, good point. You got me. You know what kind of blew me away? I've got, like, good news and bad news. Like, I lost my second cat in 2 months, and that's it.
Oh.
But the great news is my kid brother is back from Afghanistan.
Well, hallelujah.
If I can just keep him from, you know, free enlisting kind of thing.
Is he looking at a re-up?
It's 2011, so I'd rather we just stop the war before then.
That would work fine by me.
Me too, you know. Oh, and I wanted to ask you touched on this a couple weeks ago, and I'm a little bit behind on podcast stuff. On the EPA hold and on the EPA hold in West Virginia, what's the next step after the comment?
It's a 60-day period, and then the decision gets made, and there is some news on that front today, by the way. The EPA apparently making an announcement, and it's kind of hard to sort out. Let me get this up here real quick so that I can, because I'm glad you reminded me because I meant to go to it earlier. There we go. It'll be here in just a second. Apparently they have put are going to put. And I've been reading this all day, trying to sort out what exactly what they did today is they reached their decision about those 79 permits.
Right.
And they declared that all 79 need more review.
What's that mean?
That means that none of them are going through, at least not right now, not as they are currently constituted. Here's the text. It's a statement from the EPA. EPA Assistant Administrator for Water, Peter S. Silva, today finalized the list of 79 Appalachian surface coal mining permits requiring additional review and coordination under the Clean Water Act. EPA's letter today confirms that all 79 permits initially identified on September 11th must undergo additional evaluation by EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers. EPA's final list was transmitted in a letter to the Assistant Secretary of the Army Civil Works, Joellen Darcy. The 79 permits represent all of the backlogged surface coal mining projects under review by the Army Corps of Engineers. After a careful, and this is important, after a careful evaluation of these surface coal mining projects, EPA determined that each of them, as currently proposed, is likely to result in significant harm to water quality and the environment and are therefore not consistent with requirements of the Clean Water Act. EPA and the Corps have developed a joint enhanced coordination process that establishes a schedule and procedures for the evaluation of these 79 permits. The Corps of Engineers is now responsible under the coordination process for beginning the next stage of discussions with EPA and the mining companies to reduce anticipated environmental and water quality impacts. In his letter, Assistant Administrator Silva emphasized that EPA looks forward to working closely with the Army Corps of Engineers with the involvement of mining companies to achieve a resolution of EPA's concerns that avoids harmful environmental impacts and meets our energy and economic needs. Now, here's the trick. There's no way that you can there's no way to engineer a mountaintop removal permit such that it doesn't do those things.
Right, but there's also people that think the planet's not heating up. I mean, they're not going to appoint some guy just to fast-track the shit back through. If nothing else, it can actually get bogged down in...
It's going to get bogged even further.
Oh, sweet. As long as there's a ceasefire, you know, or whatever the hell sends Fly Rock flying. That's fantastic.
It is truly humongous news. And you know that it's humongous news because the United Mine Workers said this: we are extremely concerned that the decision to further delay 79 permits for Appalachian surface mining operations will result in layoffs of our members who work at these operations in southern West Virginia.
Yeah, they took my job. Okay. Well, you know, let them spout, I guess. Let them freaking run their mouth. But yeah, bog that down, whatever it takes. That's very, very cool. That makes that poster, that print up on my wall look all the more sweeter.
Exactly.
The one that I can't remember what her name is, but
that's Diane. It's a beautiful thing, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, we need to move some more of those. There are a few left. We absolutely do. So thanks for reminding me, because there's never been a better time than with this news coming out to have your own copy of For the Love of West Virginia hanging on your wall. I've got mine here, and it is. It is absolutely stunning.
I got number 10. I don't know what everybody else. Look, this is me bragging now. But no, it's fantastic, whatever the number is, you know, 1 or 120, I don't care. You know, it's just awesome that it's up there. And, you know, for once I did something that, you know, you know, my parents are like, you know, hey, you know, who'd you vote for? Nader. Well, you threw your vote away. Yeah, except it meant something. You know, hey, you didn't have money for rent, but you got a print. Yeah, and it means something. And look how bright it is up on my wall, Mom and Dad.
A little bit of sunshine.
Sorry, I quit college. <You know? laughs> hey, a quick question: going to college and it being prayer meeting and else. And everything else, and I am not one who wishes ill on, or wishes injury on players, per se.
Right.
But how great, you know, and like I said, and when I watch the replay, and you see dude's head go forward, it is horrific. But I just happen to be, since I'm no longer affiliated with any kind of a school, you know, I've learned to hate Texas since I live in Austin, even though I grew up loving them. How awesome, so I'm skipping through channels. How awesome was that hit when Kentucky just nailed Third Timothy and Tebow? I mean, I'm talking about the hit itself, not the, you know.
Oh, it was you know, the thing is the Kentucky hit's not what did him in. It was the knee of his own armored up player behind him.
Right. And so that's, you know, and so I wasn't cheering once the guy, you know, I was going, all right, please don't let him start doing the dead guy jiggle like when things go bad when you're watching Cops or anything like that. I just mean, you know, just the guy.
Well, I just don't know why God let that offensive lineman be behind him like that.
Some kind of a Bathsheba thing in his past?
You just don't know. maybe Tim audibled away from the play that God wanted called.
Right. God loves the Wildcat.
God does.
At least going against who was that? Was the
and God never bets and God never bets against Miami? The spread either.
Yeah, I had to watch a lot of what God was into in the Cougars, U of H. Who, by the way, they've got a quarterback that loves putting scriptures up on his eye black too.
Oh, no, not another one.
Yeah, yeah. Between him and I think I emailed you right away, or emailed or texted you right away, that first USC game, that guy that dropped the three praise gods in the interview. What's his, I don't remember their quarterback's name.
Oh, starts with a B, doesn't it?
First two words out of his mouth were praise God, and he got it in two more times in that interview. I was like, oh, great, and is it a program that's going to be on TV?
Well, you know, it's just like Idiocracy, you know, brought to you by Carl's Jr. He's getting paid.
Right.
He's laying up treasure in heaven by saying praise God on ESPN.
Excellent. Oh, by the way, and in a light moment, I'll let you go. Have you seen a whacked-out video, and the website is called sweeptheleg.com, but it's a music video called Sweep the Leg for a band called No More Kings?
No.
David, who's way ahead of me, would be, you know, I'm surprised he hasn't called. And I've missed so many shows, so he may already have this thing on his radar, and I'm not trying to jump anybody's, you know, gun or anything. And I think it's been out a few years. It's the whole song is based on, you know, The Karate Kid and Ralph Macchio. But, yeah, it's a hysterical, you know, four-minute watch.
Sweeptheleg.com.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so I've got a little entertainment after the show ends.
I think so. I would have never thought, you know, I would have never sat down to do lyrics and go, hey, what the hell rhymes with Cobra Kai? But,
man, somebody was working.
Yeah, yeah. What rhymes with, you know, crane kick to the face? You know, that kind of thing. I would have never thought about that. It's a cool little video, and they got the entire cast, with the exception of Pat Morita, because he's dead, I think, and Ralph Macchio, but they've got everybody else from the movie in the video. It's hysterical.
Awesome. I will find it. I will check it out.
Well, and you have a great, oh, hell, it's only Wednesday. Yeah, I don't call in as much. I sound like a jerk when I usually do, and you just got so many smart callers that need to be on instead of me.
No. You know, one of the things, I love the fact that you sort of catch up with older podcasts and you remind me of what we've been doing. Because Bart Kopp has, you know, he's got this little project underway where people are doing synopses of his radio shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, wow, if only I could convince people to do that for, you know, the 4 years we've got of this.
I don't know why you're not putting out CDs of the best of the horn.
Because it's brutally difficult to sit there and edit 3 hours of audio every night.
Oh, I didn't mean, and you know, so I'm sure there are listeners that are grabbing and isolating clips anyway. But, you know, dude, between the stuff of Albert and Sandra and David and I think of and Juanita and Fancy mentioned, and I'll let it go after this, Fancy mentioned Warehouse 13 the other night. That's a cool little show. She's right. I mean, one of the toys that they're, you know, it's all objects that have been imbued with some kind of weird occult power kind of deal that they're running around and collecting before they screw up the world. But, you know, one of the guns they carry, instead of carrying a 40 Smith & Wesson, they're running across, you know, running around with some kind of a stun gun that Nikola Tesla came up with. So, you know, it is fun. She's right. It's eye candy and just a guilty pleasure. Well, look, I'll let you go. Have a great week of football. It being Wednesday, there's only one more. There's a game.
Well, I've got a Mountaineer game tomorrow night.
Oh.
The Colorado Buffaloes come visiting Morgantown. Now, last year when we went out and visited them, our fundamentalist head coach forgot that football was played on a clock.
Oh.
At a really inopportune moment, I might add. And he just stood there as the seconds ticked away with that eponymous look on his face like a pole-axed mule. And snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yes, I'm familiar with the agony of defeat. And by the way, somebody touched on last night, and I'll let it go. I just can't let go of the college football thing, even though I'm not a fan of any particular team anymore. From Tennessee, called in, and it was talking about, you know, there shouldn't be a poll till week four or whatever.
Yeah, that was Luke.
Yeah. I sure look forward to the Saturday night when the tower here in Austin is not lit up. Because, you know, they've been, you know, rolling up on UTEP, you know, and whoever at the Texas School for the Deaf, and I forget whoever else UT opens their season with. But,
you know, they went up to Wyoming and almost got it handed to them.
Well, a lot of that's Greg Davis. And there was talk 4 years ago about the fact that people thought Greg Davis must have nude gay pictures of Mac Brown. you know, with the offense that he was coming up with. You know, not that there's anything wrong with that. But, you know, I mean, you know, so, you know, usually there's a fire Greg Davis thing once they play their first real conference game or something like that. You know, and I know you being fans of, you know, the SEC and all that, you know, you probably don't think Big 12 really is a real conference. So
well, it's a real conference. It just needs some real competition.
Sure it does.
You know, there's two teams at the top and everybody else.
Yeah, the story people missed on, by the way, and that was Sam Bradford was throwing on the sideline the other night, you know, just kind of, you know, staying loose deal, and he walks off, and the next thing you know, he goes to the doctor. So OU's not going to have a quarterback probably for a while, too.
Oh, really?
But anyway.
Well,
yeah,
so you know, the shootout on the Red River's coming not too awful far in the future, is it?
17th.
Yeah, see.
Unfortunately, I have a gig that day. I'm thinking it's going to be pretty slow. You know, because nobody's going to be.
Well, see, we've got a. It's such a pain how life intrudes. Agnes and I have to go to this hearing tomorrow afternoon, and then we have to be at a luncheon on Friday that we're looking forward to. And tomorrow night, Colorado is playing in Morgantown. But more importantly, tomorrow night, one of my favorite musicians is playing in Morgantown, and I really, really wanted to be there, but there's no way I can go to the hearing, get on the horse, go to Morgantown, sit in a smoky bar, swill a couple of beers, drive 150 miles home, and be at the luncheon anything resembling human tomorrow, especially feeling the way I feel. But I really wanted to be there because Jason Isbell is going to be in Morgantown tomorrow night.
I don't know who he is. Are y'all still smoking in your bars up there?
No, come to think of it, we're not. But God Almighty, this place is called 123 Pleasant Street. It used to be the Nyabingi Dance Hall, and before that it was the Underground Railroad. And there's enough residual in there for, the half-life of the smoke in the ceiling and the walls is probably something that can only be measured by geologists.
Right.
Right, but we talked about Jason Isbell. I got to figure out a way for you to... Well, just check out YouTube and just look up Jason Isbell in the 400 unit. You'll dig it.
Oh, he's the ex-military dude.
Well, no, I don't know that he's ex-military, but he writes very convincingly about veterans and veteran issues.
Oh, very good. For some reason, I thought you had said he was prior service. But well, anyway, I have taken up time, and you've got good people waiting. So it was great talking to you again, Bob.
Good talking to you too, Lee, and take care.
You too, sir. We'll
All right.
See
ya. Bye now. Calling from... I think he gave himself away. Austin, that's our buddy Lee. And, you know, that idea that out there are people collecting clips of this program just for the fun of it, kind of, gosh, maybe I could have, is it possible that I could have a Glenn Beck-esque air check somewhere on YouTube? Oh, it's stunning to think about. We got about 19 minutes left in the program, and I want to share something with you. It's a reading. Okay. Deal with it. But like I said, I love historical perspective. And I love being able to look and read something from 100 or more years ago and realize that we only think we are still, that we're dealing with something new. But when we talk about the crookedness of insurance companies, we're talking about something that has literally been going on for probably a third or more of the life of this nation. And my proof comes from that greatest of Americans, Samuel Langhorne Clemens. You know, he wrote bit pieces when he was out in California for the local papers there. I forget who he was writing for, maybe the San Francisco Examiner or something. But he wrote this piece called An Inquiry About Insurances. See, back then it was plural. More than one insurance was insurances. And I just wanted to share it with you because I read it the other night and I laughed mightily. And it's not that long. But I thought it might give some sense of perspective how long it is that this country has been getting raped by insurers. Of course, Mark Twain doesn't say it that way. He makes it funny. And by being funny, it proves its own point all the more. He was quoted beautifully in last night's episode of the National Parks, the Ken Burns
documentary in talking about the Kilauea volcano. It was lovely. But anyway, Mark Twain, an inquiry about insurances. Coming down from Sacramento the other night, I found on a center table in the saloon of the steamboat a pamphlet advertisement of an accident insurance company. It interested me a good deal with its general accidents and its hazardous tables and extra hazardous furniture of the same description, and I would like to know something more about it. It is a new thing to me. I want to invest if I come to like it. I want to ask merely a few questions of the man who carries on this accident shop, for I am an orphan. He publishes this list as accidents he is willing to insure people against. General accidents include the traveling risk and also forms of dislocations, broken bones, ruptures, tendons, sprains, concussions, crushings, bruisings, cuts, stabs, gunshot wounds, poisoned wounds, burns and scalds, freezing, bites, unprovoked assaults by burglars, robbers, or murderers, the action of lightning or sunstroke, the effects of explosions, chemicals, floods, and earthquakes, suffocation by drowning or choking, where such accidental injury totally disables the person insured from following his usual avocation or causes death within 3 months from the time of the happening of the injury. I want to address this party as follows. Now, Smith, I suppose likely your name is Smith. You don't know me, and I don't know you, but I'm willing to be friendly. I'm acquainted with a good many of your family. I know John as well as I know any man, and I think we can come to an understanding about your little game without any hard feelings. For instance, do you allow the same money on a dog bite that you do on an earthquake? Do you take special risks for specific accidents? That is to say, could I, by getting a policy for dog bites alone, get it cheaper than if I took a chance in your whole lottery? And if so, and supposing I got insured against earthquakes, would you charge any more for San Francisco earthquakes than for those that prevail in places that are better anchored down? And if I had a policy on earthquakes alone, I couldn't collect on a dog bite, but maybe could I? If a man had such a policy, and an earthquake shook him up and loosened his joints a good deal, but not enough to incapacitate him from engaging in pursuits which did not require him to be tight, wouldn't you pay him some of his pension? I notice you do not mention Biles. How about Biles? Why do you discriminate between provoked and unprovoked assaults by burglars? If a burglar entered my house at dead of night, and I, in the excitement natural to such an occasion, should forget myself and say something that provoked him, and he should cripple me, wouldn't I get anything? But if I provoked him by pure accident, I would have you there, I judge, because you would have to pay for the accident part of it anyhow, seeing that insuring against accidents is just your strong suit, you know. Now, that item about protecting a man against freezing is good. It will procure you all the custom you want in this country, because you understand the people hereabouts have suffered a good deal from just such climatic drawbacks as that. Why, 3 years ago, if a man, being a small fish in the matter of money, went over to Washoe and bought into a good silver mine, they would let that man go on and pay assessments till his purse got down to about 32 Fahrenheit, and then the big fish would close in on him and freeze him out. And from that day forth, you might consider that man in the light of a bankrupt community. And you would have him down to a spot, too. But if you're ready to insure against that sort of thing and can stand it, you can give Washoe a fair start. You might send me an agency. Business? Why, Smith, I could get you more business than you could attend to. With such an understanding as that, the boys would all take a chance. You don't appear to make any particular mention of taking risks on blighted affections. But if you should conclude to do a little business in that line, you might put me down for 6 or 7 chances. I wouldn't mind expense. You might enter it on the extra hazardous. I suppose I would get ahead of you in the long run, anyhow likely. I've been blighted a good deal in my time. But now as to those effects of lightning. Suppose the lightning were to strike out at one of your men and miss him and fetch another party. Could that other party come on you for damages? Or could the relatives of the party that suddenly snaked out on, out of the bright world in the bloom of his youth come on you in case he was crowded for time? As, of course, he would be, you know, under such circumstances. You say you have issued over 60,000 policies, 45 of which have proved fatal and been paid for. Now, do you know, Smith, that looks just a little shaky to me, I measure. You appear to have it pretty much all your own way, you see. It is all very well for the lucky 45 that have died and been paid for, but how about the other 59,955? You've got their money, haven't you? But somehow the lightning don't seem to strike them, and they don't get any chance at you.
Won't their families get fatigued waiting for their dividends? Don't your customers drop off rather slow, so to speak? You will ruin yourself publishing such damaging statements as that, Smith. I tell you as a friend. If you'd said that the 59,955 died and that 45 lived, you would have issued about 4 tons of policies the next week. But people are not going to get insured when you take so much pains to prove that there's such precious little use in it. Goodbye, Smith! All good fun. All very good fun. But buried in the very good fun is a very good deal of truth. Because as far back as what must surely be the 1870s or 1880s, perhaps the 1890s, here you have insurers in the San Francisco area of California publishing tables of the risks against which they are willing to insure. And as Twain well recognized, all too entirely familiar with how they will go about trying to get out of paying the claim. Because remember, Twain is writing at a time when business was, laissez-faire capitalism was running absolutely amok in this country and damn near ruining it. And the insurance industry was largely peopled by frauds, con men, and charlatans. But wait. How is that a representation of the 19th century and not the 21st? Because at the end of the day, it's all bunko. It's all hokum. You'll notice that Twain casts it as a matter of a lottery, as a matter of buying chances. And needles the fictional Smith quite well in the way of noting that he's got 59,000 subscribers and paid 45 claims. Beautiful thing, right? So, you know, from time to time I've pointed out that our greatest curse is the fact... Eugene Finnerman loved it so much, I'll do it again, that like Nicol Williamson says in Merlin, John Borman's Excalibur, for it is the doom of men that they forget. It is. It is our doom that we forget. This whole healthcare debate is taking place in an atmosphere in which we act as if one side is dealing honestly when the entire history and nature of the insurance industry is grounded in nothing but abject dishonesty. It was born in fraud. It was conceived in gambling. You know, the first insurance house was Lloyd's of London. Do you happen to know what Lloyd's of London was? Lloyd's of London was a coffee house where well-to-do merchants who had shipping going abroad would sit and gamble with each other on which ships would actually make it home. And that was the birth of the insurance industry. Gambling on people's lives. Because, you know, when you're sitting in London and something's leaving Southampton docks and headed off to some godforsaken corner of the world in the 18th century, not only might the cargo not come back, the crew might not come back. And some smiling, grinning ghoul is sitting there betting, wagering on the lives of men in the riggings of square-rigged sailing ships, traversing howling storms at sea, and perhaps confronted by natives who were none too thrilled about having their resources exploited by the British West India Company or the Dutch East India Company. And grinning like the fiends that they were, they gambled on whether or not those salts would come home with the goods. And they're still doing the same
godforsaken thing, and we're acting like it's noble, and we're acting like it's reputable, and we're acting like it is somehow an activity that should be smiled upon by our body politic. When in actuality, where health care is concerned, we should really, the nature of the debate should be why we continue to allow these ghoulish fiends to gamble on whether or not the agony and misery and death of other human beings, other Americans, comes sooner or later, and the degree to which these ghouls and fiends will contribute or fail to contribute to the attempt to forestall that agony, illness, misery, and death. Does this make sense? Does the practice make sense? And is what I'm saying, does it make sense? Why is it so easy for you and me to comprehend these as facts, and so almighty difficult for our elected representatives in Washington to comprehend them? Is it a case of that self-same quote that Judy Bonds notes in the Coal Country documentary? Is it a case of that? I believe she credited, see, I'm going to screw this up again, either Sinclair Lewis or Upton Sinclair, who said, it is mighty hard to get a man to understand something It is mighty hard to get a man to understand something when his livelihood depends on him not understanding it. Welcome to Congress. It is going to be mighty hard to get Congress to understand that the healthcare industry in this company, in this country, is predicated on preying upon the agony, illness, misery, and death of American citizens, when their well-being, those elected representatives, when the elected representatives' well-being is predicated on them not understanding it because of the money that rolls into them from those self-same healthcare companies, insurers, and pharmaceutical companies. That is simple to us, but damn near undecipherable to them. And just in case you were wondering, it has been undecipherable for way over 100 years. Perhaps 200 if you count in the British Empire and the Lloyd's of London crowd. Hell, that may have been the 17th century. I can't remember anymore. But for all those years, you and me, our loved ones, our ancestors have been the fodder upon which the insurers have fed. And I, for one, I won't dare speak for you, but I, for one, am sick and tired of being somebody else's financial smorgasbord. Now the big question is how we convey that to those elected representatives whose well-being depends on them not understanding it. So that's the program for tonight. Thank you, everyone, for joining in. We will be here tomorrow night. No football for no middle school football tomorrow night. This is the end of September. We did not get close to our fundraising goal. We so seldom do. But there will be an October. Whether there will be a November will be determined in the next 31 days. Thank you to those who have sent donations, contributions this evening. It is appreciated more than you can know by all of us. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional, who continues to recuperate. Thanks to the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch, who's been proving it since 2002 at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working
bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, whose hard work has paid off in the kind of information that you heard this evening coming out of the Environmental Protection Agency. CRMW.net and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.